Correto. I think we should start. The first presenter will start at 9 o'clock. It will be Mr. Jeremy Acton. Has he joined? Committee Secretary?
Chairperson, I'm trying to call him. He's not joined yet.
Is that joined yet? Okay. But he will be starting at 9. Is that correct? He'll be presenting at 9.
Yes, Chair.
Okay. Members, the program was sent to you, I think, sometime last week. Did you?
Honourable Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt. I do believe Mr. Acton will be joining. I was in contact with him yesterday, and he did indicate that he will be joining. So I'll try to.
Okay. No problem. He still has time because he will be presenting at 9. I think the 15 minutes is for us to do housekeeping. Members, the program was circulated to yourselves last week. Has everybody received the copy of the program?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. I think we will be operating under strict timelines because we have to receive presentations over 3 days from 27 organizations. I would really appeal to members to be short and be straight to the point and no preambles so that we are able to stick to the timelines. Are we fine with it?
Yes, of course, Chair. We're supposed to listen more than we speak.
Yes. It's public hearings. Thank you very much, Honorable Horn, for reminding us that it would be important that we accord space to the organizations and people who will be presenting, and we don't make a preamble when we ask questions. But if your question is covered, because some of the presentations might be covering same issues, it's also good to pass so that we stick to the timelines that we have set for ourselves. So members, let's take this opportunity to welcome everybody on the virtual platform, those who will be presenting and those who will be watching from home. You are all welcome. We'll be meeting today from 9 until 2, and then tomorrow from 9 until 7. And then on Thursday, we'll be meeting from 2 until 6. So it's a packed program. We would want to do as much as we can to process this bill. Bearing in mind that we still have another bill that we still have to do, the criminal law amendment, in which we must meet the Constitutional Court deadline of December. So our program for the term is a packed program, and we still have to also do the interviews for the information regulator. So every time we have, we must use it effectively and efficiently. So members, I think between now and 9 o'clock, it will be time for you to drink your tea. Then we start with the presentation of Mr. Acton at 9 o'clock. And welcome Honorable Self and Honorable Breitenbach.
Hello, thank you.
Thank you.
I have a very sore mouth. I've just had a tooth extracted.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're not as sorry as I am, believe me.
Hey, thank you.
Welcome.
And Honorable Ngola, you're not under the tree today. Honorable Ngola?
He is under the tree, you see, he's under the tree.
Yeah, no, I can see. All members, can we drink our tea except Honorable Breitenbach? We will drink on your behalf, and everybody, we will start at 9 o'clock.
Recording in progress.
Welcome, Honorable John Chair.
Morning, Chair. Morning, class.
Linjani.
Right, Slalom, on the corner, right?
I'm writing, right.
It's happening after the meeting, before.
All right.
In the house.
Okay, no, that's good.
Sure.
So, Honorable Swart.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to colleagues, and good morning to all the guests. Good to see you looking very well this morning, Chairperson, for a long day.
Thank you very much. Yes. Prof, good morning. Prof? Just to brief Honorable Janji, Honorable Swart, Honorable Breitenbach, and Prof Msimang, that we generally agreed that we adopt the program that was circulated to everybody. We need to stick to the timelines and the times given because our program is fully packed, so we have times indicated, we need to stick to them. So we appeal to members that when we ask questions, let us not make long preambles, let us be straight to the point, because the aim of this meeting is to hear more. Honorable Horn from DA has put it very well that we need to be listening more from the members of the public for this public hearings. We are encouraged to ask questions, but let's show that we are not repetitive and we don't have long preamble so that we can be able to stick to the time given. I thought that before we start, we need to have that understanding, members. Honorable Swart?
Yes, Chair, thank you for your introductory notes and comments. Could you give us an indication of how the decision was made as to invite certain organizations? I think members of the public would be interested in that decision-making process, because obviously we can't have everyone who made public submissions attending oral hearings, but I'm sure many would wonder what criteria, such as we normally use, we invite organizations to make oral hearings and those that have requested to make oral hearings. And clearly we, and I'm grateful that on our request that you just extend public hearings, but maybe you can just give an indication on that basis if you think that's advice. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much. When we invite the public for comments, members of the public also the invitation makes it clear that those who would want to make oral representation indicate. and all those that have made that request have been granted as such, that if those who want to make just oral submission, they have been given that opportunity to make oral submission. Those who prefer just to make written submissions, we would consider those also when we respond, because after the public hearings, we will be considering each and every oral or written submission that has been made, and the departments are going to be responding to all the submissions that have been made, both oral and written. But everybody who has made a request to make an oral submission was granted that request. Thank you very much. Can we now invite the first presenter to make a presentation? Mr. Acton, you have 20 minutes to make your presentation. Mr. Acton?
Sorry, Chair.
Yes.
Honorable Neil Griffin. Apologies, Chair. Good morning to everyone. Can every presenter, when they do present, just switch on their camera, if possible? It would be good if you have a good network, just to see who is presenting. If it's not possible, it's fine as well. But if at all possible. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable.
Sure. Yes, Chair. No, I just want to let you know that at 10 I'm expected to attend for the election of the chairperson in the international relations.
Okay. You will come back after that.
No, Jay, he hopes to be elected.
I was asking, you will come back after that. Is that correct?
Yes, Chair, it's just only one item, the election of the chair. Then after that, I'm coming back.
Oh, okay. When is Honorable Mola Dalika Fox, can you vouch?
Members, I think that is why we have asked everybody to come at 2:15, so that we can deal with all these things during that time. We have taken minutes out of the presentation of Mr. Acton. Can we start now with the public hearings? Mr. Acton, can you present?
Chairperson?
Yes.
Yeah. Mr. Acton seems to be having a problem. I'm trying to call him, but maybe while I was waiting for him, maybe we should invite another person and then I'll be in touch with him so that we can speak to whatever person that is on the call.
Okay.
Good. Jeremy.
Mr. Acton, yes, we can hear you.
Okay, I'm ready to do my verbal submission. Sorry about that technical issue.
Okay.
Okay.
There is a background noise. Can you ensure that you are the only one in the room?
I am trying to find a place that is quiet. Is that acceptable? Hello?
Hello?
Hi, can I proceed?
Proceed.
Thank you very much. Verbal submission by Jeremy Acton to the Ministry of Justice and Parliament and to the public in regard to the proposed Cannabis for Private Purposes Bill. This message will take 20 minutes and 55 seconds. My name is Jeremy Acton and I was co-plaintiff in the original Western Cape Constitutional Court case, which ultimately led to the confirmation by the Constitutional Court of the Section 14 privacy right to cultivation and possession of cannabis for private adult consumption as expressed in the judgment case 108/17 CCT. I hereby register my complete dissatisfaction with the bill and the process whereby it has been drafted for presentation to the Republic, to the public, and I reject the bill in its entirety. I veto this bill for my own rights and for the rights of the people of the cannabis culture in South Africa. The bill attempts to impose legislation that is outside the ambit of the judgment and which is expressly forbidden by the judgment. The bill is an unreasonable, unjustified, irrational, and intentionally malicious limitation of my rights, which arose from the judgment and which I currently enjoy and which I am not prepared to forfeit. I state outright that I reject and entirely oppose the bill's mention of amendments to the Road Traffic Safety Act to allow the state to impose breathalyzer tests or other tests for cannabis. These provisions have never been required in the past and are not supported by any evidence of risks to driving safety, and existing clauses in the Traffic Safety Act already adequately permit prosecution for irresponsible behavior of drivers. My inner cannabinoid content is an essential aspect of my privacy in relation to cannabis, and nobody has any right to know my THC levels, nor try to determine those levels, as such information is not relevant as to others, as long as I respect the others' rights of others in society or on public roads. I also inform the government of South Africa, including all of Parliament, that I do not contract with the bill at all, and notwithstanding any claim of due process in the drafting of the bill by Parliament, I shall never abide by or comply with this bill. This bill is entirely misdirected in spirit and in method, and it is the result of an utterly ridiculous and irrational process in that the drafting of this bill has been handed by the Constitutional Court to the very defendant in the original constitutional case who opposed the action. That is like asking the real criminals to become the judges, or to act as wolves might do to decide for the rights of sheep. The present process in creating this bill is therefore logically unacceptable from its very roots, and this useless, antisocial, malicious, drug war-orientated bill is the clear result. The Ministry of Justice has always been opposed to cannabis use by society, and in the Western Cape Constitutional Dacha case, the Ministry of Justice opposed the granting of rights to cannabis users, as decided by the court, and since the judgment is again applying the same prohibitionist, controlling, fascist policing model it has always used in the past. The state has since 1923 prohibited cannabis and used police state methods to abuse the right of citizens, and this proposed cannabis for private purposes bill intends to do the same. For the record, the facts about cannabis. In the Constitutional Court case, the state refused to admit, even to the extent of suppressing from the case record, the expert witness testimonies of Mr. T. Budden, expert in hemp industry and nutrition, and Dr. R. Melamedes, a global expert in cannabinoid research and medical cannabis, as submitted by myself in the Western Cape High Court for the Dacha case. Cannabis provides a number of beneficial resources to humans and other animal species. These benefits of cannabis include the presence of medically beneficial cannabinoids in the plant that regulate the signaling system of the human endocannabinoid system. which positively enables homeostasis, that is the restoration of chemical balance in the human body, and manages metabolism, and manages immune response and inflammation, and manages the apoptosis of damaged or aged cells in the human body, and which promotes the secretion of beneficial hormones, oxytocin and melatonin, and which can be used in pain management, and does generally promote health in humans and animals. Cannabis has a complete absence of the potential for lethal overdose by ingestion or smoking. Cannabis provides a highly nutritious and high-protein seed for human and animal nutrition, featuring all the necessary amino acids and fatty acids for health. Meanwhile, the state drags its heels on allowing the cultivation of hemp seed for human nutrition, while 15 million children go to bed hungry every day. Cannabis provides a seed oil that has a health supplement and nutritional benefits, and which can be used as a lighting oil and as a machine oil. Cannabis provides the longest and strongest plant fiber on earth, most suited to the production of durable textiles and other useful goods. And it provides cellulose herds from the inside of the sticks, which can be made into carbon neutral methanol, methane or bioplastics. And cannabis stalks, if chopped and mixed with lime and some sand, can be used for manufacturing building blocks in the home construction industry. Cannabis provides carbon sequestration services for the cleaning of the atmosphere of excess carbon pumped into the air by the burning of fossil carbon. It provides a potential boost to recreational and health tourism opportunities arising from visitors to South Africa who seek to experience cannabis and cannabis-based therapies in different areas of South Africa. Cannabis is a water-efficient, productive, drought-resistant, weed-resistant, pest-resistant crop that matures in a very short period of time, 3 to 3.5 months, with multiple simultaneous economic benefits, and which can be farmed on marginal agricultural land that cannot support other more sensitive crops. Regarding the personal determination of cannabis needs, as regards my own personal private cannabis needs, I personally require 120 grams of dry cannabis flowers of my choice for smoking per week. That is 6.25 kilograms of dry flower per year, and 1.2 kilograms of dry cannabis flowers per week for sharing with personal friends in the cannabis culture of South Africa, which is my right. That is 62.4 kilograms of dry flowers minimum per year. I also require at least 60 milliliters of full extract cannabis oil per year for the prevention and treatment of any cancer or other ailments that I may suffer. I further require 2.3 milliliters per week of full extract cannabis oil for recreational private use. I require 500 grams.
Can you hear me? Okay. I require... Can you hear me?
Yes, proceed.
Okay, yes, thank you. I require 500 grams per day for my own, for our own home nutritional food subsistence in terms of Section 27.1 B, right to access to food. And I claim the right to privately cultivate such quantities of plants to fulfill these needs. I do not accept that this is left over to a future cannabis master plan. These are my rights right now. I require cannabis seed for livestock and poultry and fish feed in my animal husbandry activities. And according to the judgment, all of the above needs may be privately met and as maybe privately determined by myself, without dictate or policing by the state. I further require at least 100 cubic meters of cannabis stalk biomass per year to assist with my home construction needs or for burning as carbon neutral energy and to offset my carbon footprint. The necessary number of plants that must be cultivated to...
Mr. Elton, you're muted.
I calculate privately by myself and by myself only. in terms of my Section 14 right to privacy in my determination of my cannabis needs and my right to privately cultivate cannabis for those needs and my right to store and possess the results of my efforts. I personally and privately estimate that any cannabis citizens' private cannabis needs will only be fulfilled by the cultivation of 2,500 square meters minimum area, and any area less than this must be deemed inadequate for their needs. I presently only cultivate about 100 square meters of cannabis for my private use, which area is presently deemed to be inadequate. I claim my right to privately cultivate 2,500 square meters of cannabis without abuse of my privacy by police or the state. I recognize that every other South African should have the same rights and access to the land necessary to cultivate this area. The bill therefore intentionally and maliciously attempts to limit and prescribe the amount of cannabis that a citizen may cultivate or use. It is a declaration of war upon by the state, upon the whole public of South Africa, and upon the cannabis culture of South Africa. The bill is not mandated by the judgment to prescribe to this cannabis user's privacy, nor my privacy in any relation to any of my decisions about my cultivation and use of cannabis, nor ever enter into my private garden where I cultivate my cannabis. The statements by the state in its submissions that private cannabis must needs be invisible to the public in order to be considered private is also rejected with contempt. The boundaries of any person's property or private space, while possibly being visible from the street, are still recognized by law as a private place. And this view of the state regarding the need for cannabis to remain invisible to passing members of the public clearly shows that it has no clue regarding the concept of privacy or personal boundaries, or that privacy may easily and explicitly be demarcated by signage and limitation of access to the cannabis private space, even if the cannabis is visible over or through a fence, and the height of that fence is also irrelevant if it clearly demarcates a private space. The bill proposes a continuance of the blunt criminal law approach to regulating the use of cannabis and attempts to use criminal law processes to dictate to and reduce and invade citizens' new Section 14 rights to the private use of cannabis. The concept of privacy is the total right to be free of outside interference, and it is a place where privacy can by rights be defended, and any place that is subject to surveillance, prescription or policing by the state is by definition not private. A private place may not be subjected to invasion by any other entity, whether person or state, and certainly not by proactive policing and crime intelligence action against cannabis and its users, which is still mandated by the Illicit Drugs and Trafficking Act and still enabled by the bill. I state here emphatically that my interpersonal cannabinoid content and my decisions regarding cannabis use, cultivation, possession, and processing for my use are and shall remain utterly outside of any other juristic person's control, to the extent that I do not impose my use of cannabis or my behavior upon others to negatively affect their rights. The judgment granted us the right to use cannabis privately, and this right starts at any citizen's initial determination of their needs and their cultivation of their needs and the use of the plant for those needs. All of the human needs met by cannabis may, in terms of the judgment, be privately considered by a citizen in determining their cannabis needs. The fact that the state is not prepared to acknowledge these facts about the cannabis resource does not give the state any legitimacy in denying the private use of cannabis plants for any of the above-mentioned reasons, and the judgment is not limited only to enabling the use of cannabis for ingesting of cannabinoids. Private adult consumption must include all possible aspects of consumption, and this bill tries to specifically exclude the consumption of cannabis as nutrition. If this citizen decides that the cultivation of 50 square meters or even 100.
Mr. Upton?
If a citizen decides that the cultivation of 50 square meters or 100 square meters of cannabis stalk biomass will, this is 50 cubic meters or even 100 cubic meters of cannabis biomass will fulfill his private personal needs to construct a home or room with cannabis fiber blocks and laminated sheeting made at home from cannabis fibers, the shortcomings of the judgment in the regard to the use of cannabis as a drug only does not. Does not preclude the. Sorry. As a drug only does not increase. Sorry, there's somebody trying to phone me all the time.
Mr. Upton?
Yes.
We are struggling to hear you. Sometimes you get muted. I think your bandwidth is low.
Yes, what is happening there is somebody trying to phone me. I'm blocking them all the time.
Okay.
Okay, sorry about that. It might be the press or something.
So yeah, 5 minutes.
I just want to say that I have 3 more pages and I wish to finish my terms. Even if you deduct some questioning time, I need to finish this and I have only 3 pages left. Please allow me to finish. Thank you. Okay, the presumption that, point 34, the presumption that quantity of cannabis cultivated is a predetermining measure of any intention to deal in cannabis is entirely unfounded. And until a citizen is actually caught publicly dealing in cannabis as a drug by the police, the state has nothing to say about the quantity of cannabis that I cultivate for myself. Citizens are not presumed guilty of their potential to commit crimes by their appearances only, but only on their exercise of intention to cause harm to other rights. Where a citizen cultivates cannabis for his own private use, there are no grounds for presumption of intention to publicly deal in cannabis as a drug based on the appearances of substantial amounts of cultivation. However, in regards to the judgment's prohibition of dealing on the false and unsubstantiated notion of harms caused by cannabis, the judgment made this decision without any evidence of harm proven by the state in the court case, and as such is irrational and out of order. And again, the state in the form of the bench of the Constitutional Court limited human rights to trade, sell, exchange, gift, and make beneficial use of the cultivation of cannabis on lame and false claims of preventing non-specified harm. This aspect of the judgment is entirely rejected. The prohibition of cannabis transactions between private, informed, consenting, self-regulating, sovereign members of the cannabis culture is again a violation of rights and is rejected completely as well. And transactions regarding cannabis should be allowed between citizens in the above social context, private, informed, consenting, self-regulating members. Again, the state has no standing in preventing such private transactions, which happen every day ever since the criminal prohibition of cannabis by the traitor Jan Smuts for the British Crown in 1923. The state also still fails to understand that the continued provisions and limitations in the bill and the intended enforcement and the resulting criminal sanctions, which include the possibility of imprisonment, all cause harms to citizens that are far, far beyond any harms that are ever caused by cannabis. And all of the state's intentions are now also clearly orientated towards the continued erosion of citizens' Section 24 privacy rights. That was the goal of the judgments and is the goal of the bill. That is to set us up for erosion of our privacy rights. The proposed bill's limitation of the rights to determine for oneself one's own cannabis needs and the cultivation for those needs are truly ridiculous when reviewed in the light of citizens' rights to possess and store and use alcohol in their homes. citizens are not limited to possession of only 4 beers or 10 bottles of wine in their home, but may, if they wish, possess enough alcohol to kill themselves. So the bill is not in any way an intelligent and proportional application of limitation of rights to harmful and discriminates against cannabis, which is relatively harmless substance compared to alcohol. I have one page left. The bill also fails to respect democratic principles in that it promotes a police state drug war approach to its regulatory approach, which includes the possibility of surveillance and intrusion on citizens' private realms for the counting of plants, and still promotes the criminal punishment of citizens for their transgression of arbitrary and irrational limitations on the amount of plants that may be cultivated by citizens. The bill promotes a dictatorial paradigm where the police, who are considered in public opinion polls to be the most corrupt institution in the country, are encouraged by the Illicit Drugs and Trafficking Act and this bill to proactively police cannabis and to minimize in every possible way the public enjoyment of the cannabis plant and its publicly known health benefits. Such proactive policing against cannabis must come to an end for the spirit and the letter of the Constitutional Court judgment to be respected. The bill promotes the furtherance of police abuses that continually occur across the country, which abuses are known to include warrantless forced entry into homes, misuse of informants who operate for monetary gain, assault and even murder of cannabis users, solicitation of bribes from arrested persons to avoid victimization,
Can you round up?
I will round up. I have half a page left to go, as you can see. Okay. And these raids also result in the theft of other private property during those police raids. The judgment explicitly ordered an end to the criminal policing of private adult use of cannabis by citizens, and yet this bill totally ignores that and clearly facilitates such police actions. In conclusion, I hereby inform the state that the entire premise of cannabis for private purposes and bill are by virtue of the values and rights expressed in the Constitutional Court judgment on two mutually exclusive concepts that have no right to be in any title or any existence of such proposed legislation. And I declare this bill is vetoed by the cannabis culture and is damned and will be opposed before and after any adoption by Parliament.
Thank you very much.
Okay, this bill is vetoed. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Members, are there any questions? It will be important for us to stick to time given, because we also have other people whose voices must be heard.
I'm taking questions.
Honorable Janji, you are the first.
No. Thank you, Chair. Mine is just to add on you. It's not a question, just to welcome Mr. Acton's submission in terms of the issues that he has raised quite strongly. Just to make a brief point, Chair, in line with your approach in terms of time, would appreciate that people must raise their issues very hard, vigorously, but within the limit that everybody has been told about. We would not want to just get overboard on it. So that's that point I wanted to make, Chair. Thank you
very much, Honorable Chanji. Honorable Swart.
Chair, thank you, and thank you, Mr. Acton, for your very passionate plea. I don't quite understand how you can veto a bill, but you're entitled to express your views. This is Parliament, and Parliament has been given the job or the task by the Constitutional Court to draft a bill. Now, while I appreciate your passion, I would have liked you to have possibly suggested amendments to improve the bill. And it is, you're totally entitled to reject it in its totality. But I am concerned when you speak about militantly opposing it. And I hope that other members of the public that make submissions will help us to improve the bill. And if you feel it cannot be improved, sure, reject it in its entirety. But I do appeal that we have been given a task to draft a bill, and we will be doing that. So can I also then ask you specifically, I appreciate the right of privacy, but you seem to accept certain parts of the Constitutional Court judgment, but you reject other parts. In particular, I would like to ask you that you do not deal at all with the issue of the possible harms caused by the usage of cannabis THC that were pointed out by the Department of Health. Adolescents who are regular smokers of cannabis are at risk of having arrested psychosocial development and other cognitive development issues. Is this a concern of yours as well, or do you reject that argument? Secondly, the issue of you rejecting any issues relating to the usage of testing when you are driving a motor vehicle, for example, why should there not be a similar test that is opposed, that is applied for alcohol, blood testing, if you are using cannabis and you are presenting a possible harm to other road users? So if you could address those two issues, I would appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honorable Swart, I think your bandwidth is low. Your voice is pitched, if you can attend to it.
Thank you, Chair. I'll keep my camera off. Maybe that will help.
Okay, no, that's fine. Can you respond, sir, Mr. Acton, if you so wish? Mr. Acton? Mr. Acton, are you still there?
Seems to be muted, Chair.
Sorry, there you go, I'm back. Hello.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Okay, I'll attend to those queries.
Okay.
With regards to the question, why should we not test for use of cannabis in a traffic, road traffic situation? For the last 80 to 90 years, since 1923, the law has entirely prohibited cannabis, and no tests have ever been used to determine whether people have cannabis in their blood while driving. No, there's no evidence of cannabis-induced traffic issues, and our present law allows any kind of prosecution to take place should somebody make a mistake or be reckless or negligent upon the roads. And to test for a possible harm is firstly applying an arbitrary limit to THC, and secondly, it presumes guilt that this will lead to a harm. And prevention, removal of rights to prevent a harm, which is not substantiated in any way by any evidence, is rejected. If I make a mistake in the traffic, it is only punishable by the Safety Traffic Act, and maybe cannabis might be a contributing factor, but only after I have made that mistake and been charged or arrested can that become a material issue to the case. So therefore, preventative breathalyzing of cannabis use in South Africa is also rejected, and it is also an intention to slowly violate people's private inner cannabis state, and to make that now the domain of the state's notions of harm. As regards THC, the arrested development claim of THC is not substantiated because it doesn't factor into account all of the economic issues that people face, which lead to arrested development, like lack of nutrition, lack of opportunity unemployment and poor housing conditions. Until those matters are actually dealt with by our country, then please don't blame THC, which is a cannabinoid that is extremely beneficial in the treatment of multiple ailments and also in the treatment of my stress under this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Acton. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Your views will be taken into account when we
take
it clause by clause. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Before I allow the second presenter, let me just check which departments are part of this meeting. I saw DTIC is part. Can other departments indicate if they're present? Rural Development, are you present?
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson. The Department of Rural Development and Agrarian Reform from the Eastern Cape Province is present.
Okay, thank you very much. The National Department, is it present? Department of Health? I saw the Department of Small Business Development is present. So we have no one from the Department of Rural Development. And health. Committee Secretary, can we attend to that? Can you ensure that tomorrow they are present?
Noted, Chair.
Thank you very much. Cannabis Development Council of South Africa.
Good morning, Honourable Members.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Russ Gareth Prince, and I am the National Chairperson of the Cannabis Development Council of South Africa. I'm also a Rastafari, and I'm a member of the Indigenous First Nation community of South Africa. And can I just wish everybody present here today a very happy African Traditional Medicines Day. I don't think that it is a coincidence that these historic hearings are being held on this very auspicious day.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Prince. Your 20 minutes starts now. We have 20 minutes.
Excellent. So is the secretary doing the sharing? I can't seem to go into my presentation. There we go. So the Cannabis Development Council of South Africa represents civil society in lobbying, in parliament, in government, and aims to raise awareness of the health and socio-economic potential of cannabis. And we seek to undo a legacy of 120 years of racist and scientifically baseless cannabis prohibition. We are also advocating for a rational, scientific, and agriculturally based approach to cannabis legislation to benefit all of South Africans. We also want to foster open communication and fact-based discussion around cannabis. And we therefore advocate for cannabis as South Africa's primary reconstruction and development agent to put us at the forefront of the rapidly emerging global multi-billion dollar and rand cannabis industry. So we find that the Constitutional Court judgment of 2018, it catapulted South Africa into a position that no other government in the world has been before. It allowed South Africa to become a world leader and an innovator whilst empowering our people. But sadly, it would seem that our legislature and our executive wants us to be followers as opposed to leaders and imitators instead of innovators. The current cannabis bill and master plan is seriously fragmented, whilst the law requires it to be holistic. The legislator, by virtue of their constitutional duty to prepare laws of general application, must paint with broad strokes, not the narrow ones that they've used to draft this bill. It continues to use racist, outdated, and unscientific arguments to hold that cannabis is part of the problem instead of being part of the solution. And cannabis, frankly, represents the most realistic chance that South Africa has at empowering its 12 million unemployed people and lifting them up from the quagmire of poverty, joblessness, and desperation. All of this, we believe, can be done in a sustainable, reliable, and renewable manner if we embrace cannabis in a warm, holistic way and not in the reluctant, impassionate hug that we've seen in the bill and the master plan. So in our view, the bill suffers from serial procedural as well as substantive defects. Let me start by the process of what is called tagging. The tagging process is concerned with the question of how the bill should be considered by the provinces and in the National Council of Provinces. And how a bill must be considered by the provincial legislators depends on whether it affects the provinces. The more it affects the interests, concerns, and capacities of the provinces, the more say the provinces should have on its content, necessitating a Section 76 tagging. Now, the proposed Cannabis for Private Purposes Bill is currently incorrectly tagged as a Section 75 bill, and we maintain that it should be a Section 76 tagging, primarily because it impacts on Indigenous laws and customs, that is a Schedule 4 concurrent competency, which therefore means that both national and provincial government shares the competency to develop legislation to that effect. It also impacts on those competencies in Schedule 5 that deals with exclusive provincial competencies such as the environment and licensing. If the legislation furthermore impacts on the financial status of a province, which this proposed legislation most definitely stands to do, it furthermore demands a Section 76 tagging. There are greater procedural safeguards built into Section 76 legislation as opposed to Section 75 that ensure greater provincial and public input. Now, although there may be scope for difference of opinion when it comes to value judgments, pragmatically speaking, Parliament would usually be safe if it adopted a cautious approach and tagged borderline bills in accordance with Section 76 rather than Section 75, which is what the Western Cape High Court held in the matter of the DA versus the President of South Africa and SANRAL. Now, just before I go to the next slide, when government had to pass the Community Land Restitution Act, they did the very same thing that they are doing here. That particular bill was also tagged as Section 75, and the court rejected that, primarily because of the fact that the measures in that bill stood to significantly impact on Indigenous laws and custom, which is a Schedule 4 shared or concurrent competency. The applicants in the cannabis matter argued that the previous cannabis laws violated several constitutional rights, primarily those of equality, dignity, freedom, and privacy. Now, the Constitutional Court, by virtue of the principle of minimalism, which is that court's animating judicial policy, they chose to only develop privacy, even though civil rights violations were alleged and presented in the papers. However, the legislature cannot act by the principle of minimalism. They are obliged to develop laws as broadly as possible, because that is the nature of constitutional protection. Parliament is therefore obliged to ensure that they address all of the rights violations presented to the Constitutional Court and to develop a holistic bill of general application. So in our respectful submission, therefore, the decision to provide only for privacy laws shows a gross misunderstanding of the competency and the responsibility of the legislature. The resulting legislation is not allowing us to hit the ground running, but it condemns South Africa to be followers instead of leaders and innovators in the global cannabis space. public participation, and this is one of the big elephants in the room. According to Parliament's own public participation model, it states that a people's parliament requires an institution that prioritizes and seeks active engagement with the public that is receptive and responsive to the needs of the people. This implies that the cannabis community had to be consulted in the conceptualization and the development of the bill. This did not happen. The Department of Justice simply went out on their own and they presented a fiat accompli to the cannabis community. That is unlawful. The law states that Parliament cannot provide feedback to the public without first informing, consulting, and involving citizens. Informing, therefore, becomes an absolute prerequisite for effective public participation, which has not happened at all. An effective public participation process should therefore provide for stages of participation that are commensurate with the level of public interest. And the public interest in relation to cannabis is immense. This group has seen that the hearing that we had on the first public hearings was the biggest that the portfolio committee had ever seen. So there is immense interest on the part of people. There needs to be consultation. They need a consultation. The public must be involved. They must be informed. Parliament dismally failed in their duty to ensure that the provisions of this bill was workshopped with South Africans. And despite the fact that the CDCSA and other civil society members sought interaction with government, we were given the cold shoulder. 19 months passed before COVID hit our shores. And in that 19 months, the legislature did not reach out to the cannabis community even once, which is totally unacceptable. And the fact that public participation requirements were not met is a fatal defect to this bill. We are trying to prevent a situation where the Cannabis for Private Purposes Bill, as well as the National Master Plan, are challenged in court. If we even just look at the definition of this bill, cannabis for private purposes, that is, to our mind, a contradiction in terms. We require a single holistic cannabis bill. Could we move to the next slide? The bill in its current form still negatively impacts on people's rights to equality, dignity, freedom, and privacy, in that it still proposed to use the Criminal Penal Code to regulate cannabis. We should not use our society's most extreme sanction, which is arrest, to regulate concerns around cannabis, primarily because the alcohol and the tobacco industry, they do not face the same burden as the cannabis community. And those two communities are exponentially more burdensome to South Africa. So why should members of that community be allowed to freely use their products, but members of the cannabis community run the risk of going to jail if they do the same things? The strain on the correctional services and the inordinate costs of arrest and incarceration for the state would be immediately redressed if cannabis were to be descheduled out of the drugs and the medicines acts. That doesn't mean that the cannabis community say that there should be no regulation in relation to cannabis. Not at all. We're simply saying that the regulation should not be via the Criminal Justice Penal Code. And ladies and gentlemen, it is no coincidence that these public hearings, or the majority of them, are being held in Arbor Week. Boom, Plantingsweek. And this really exposes an inherent contradiction in the government's approach, where in Arbor Week, we are promoting the planting of trees, but the cannabis bill proposed to send people to jail for planting trees. The Cannabis for Private Purposes Bill wants to count the amount of trees that people want to plant, whereas in Arbor Week, we encourage people to plant trees wherever they can, whenever they can. So currently, what we are seeing is a strong dissonance between the Department of Social Development and Welfare and the stance of the Department of Justice, in the sense that the focus should be on harm reduction as opposed to harm prevention, which historically has proven to be an unrealistic target, and therefore cannabis should be descheduled from the Drugs as well as the Medicines Act. Furthermore, Section 14.2c of our Equality Act, the Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act, demands that the laws regulating the cannabis community may not unfairly discriminate on the bounds on the basis of criteria that are not objective and which are not related to the intrinsic nature of the activity concerned. In other words, the cannabis community cannot be discriminated against by laws that are not objective or evidence-based. So currently, there's equality concerns in the manner in which cannabis are treated vis-a-vis alcohol and tobacco. So when it comes to our objectives, we are proposing a single, holistic, unified cannabis bill that would enable cannabis for food, clothes, shelter, medicines, and jobs for struggling South Africans, to develop a multi-billion rand cannabis value chain in South Africa centered around indigenous land race cannabis, in other words, DAGA, enable the empowerment of small-scale farmers and the development of agro-processing cooperative hubs that meet our developmental agenda, utilize cannabis to meet our commitment to the UN Sustainable Development and Climate Change goals, as well as our own national development plan. When it comes to industrial cannabis, we suggest that we use what we have to get what we want. And what we have is DAGA. This artificial distinction between cannabis and hemp is one that is not based in fact or science. We should allow small farmers to participate in the industrialization of cannabis, utilizing indigenous drought-tolerant genetics that have been cultivated for hundreds of years. We need to treat cannabis as an agricultural commodity, no longer requiring special permits to be grown, and we need to return the plant to a cash crop status. Now, we solve this impasse that we currently have by simply classifying by end use, not while the plant is in the soil trying to test THC levels or CBD levels, but we rather classify by end use for commercial purposes and regulate at the point of processing. We need to develop an African definition of industrial cannabis, and we should most definitely move away from the arbitrary 0.3 limits on THC that is currently defined in Europe and North America. And therefore, we need to drive research and development based on indigenous land race genetics and global best practice. And in doing that, we would be respecting and protecting our heritage and the potential of our existing cannabis resource base. Could we use?
Mr. Prince, you have 6 minutes.
Thank you very much. I haven't finished sharing my document yet. If the secretary could just move back to the slides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can you move back to the slides?
Mr. Ramana has just been disconnected. We're trying to reconnect. Amaraz, can you quickly, you also have a right to share. Can you quickly share? You can also share the presentation, but I'm trying to locate it as well.
All right. Cannabis for health purposes. We should allow cannabis for primary and preventative health care for all those that seek to benefit from the healing attributes of the plant at a low price point to be available to the majority of our people and open the market. The thinking around medical cannabis must be revisited to accommodate the consequences of the privacy judgment, which in essence, it put a spanner in the wheel of the provision that was snuck through on the 6th of November 2016, a day before the Constitutional Court hearing. Now, currently the two-tier pharmaceutical and complementary sections on, there's two tiers, pharmaceutical cannabis and then complementary and indigenous cannabis. We need to establish an enabling cannabis healthcare and wellness regime where only pharmaceutical grade medical cannabis for specific conditions is controlled and administered through SUPRA, and establish an enabling cannabis healthcare and wellness regime for complementary healthcare products for non-specific conditions used that would fall under traditional and natural health regulations with access to cannabis through a doctor's or traditional healer's recommendation, which would entitle a person to become a registered and recognized medical cannabis user. We need to shift the focus away from exporting cannabis towards developing a local market for cannabis health products and motivate for research and development based on efficacy, including indigenous knowledge systems and regional genetics to maximize South Africa's competitive advantage, which can be regulated outside of SAPRA. The Constitutional Court unanimously ruled that the personal use of cannabis is not a criminal offense in private. However, this is limiting in that it only allows for those with access to private land the right to grow cannabis, thereby excluding the vast majority of our people. Therefore, the law needs to accommodate a reasonable trade in recreational cannabis to enable people without access to land, as well as those who cannot or who don't want to grow for themselves, the right to still use cannabis in the privacy of their homes. Therefore, we need to expand the cannabis court ruling based on the right to privacy to include the ability to cultivate, extract, process, manufacture, and sell cannabis products, cannabis-based products for recreational use along the same lines that alcohol and tobacco are currently being regulated. The state must formalize the existing illicit market, or the so-called black market, and allow it to be taxed. The recreational cannabis market is a massive potential revenue generator for the fiscus, while simultaneously positioning us to get ahead of the substance use concern. Alcohol and tobacco currently, they are multi-billion rand industries, and the harm that is attached to these industries are exponentially higher than any harm that is associated with the cannabis industry. We immediately need to establish guidelines for the South African Police Service to operate under that respect, protect, promote, and advance cannabis users' rights, and immediately stop all arbitrary arrests and police brutality towards marginalized communities that often face the brunt of police dacha operations. When it comes to cannabis economics, that is where the empowerment lies. You know, we need the development of production corridors supported by agro-processing hubs that would support at least 20,000 hectares of production and represent a new social compact between government, private sector, and community ownership. Drive a series of decortication and extraction technologies required to process industrial cannabis supported by different processing lines. Process up to 50,000 tons of fiber and 120,000 tons of herd, employing up to 100 plant workers and 50 support workers per hectare. Farmer income per hectare is difficult to accurately determine as there are many variables depending on region, climatic conditions, seed strain, etc. However, there is much money to be made. Working on average, the income can be postulated at about 175,000 rand per hectare, generating revenues of 350,000 for a small farmer on 2 hectares and net revenue of 3.5 billion for a cooperative hub farming 20,000 hectares. With regards to a proposed structure for cannabis in South Africa, the developmental state is central to introducing, modeling, and controlling cannabis production so as to ensure the benefit is carried to the majority of the rural poor. Cannabis is a national asset that should be managed as such, with the formation of a cannabis desk in the office of the presidency that could lead to the formation of a cannabis development agency that is in line with the development and state objectives. We should design and implement of an industrial cannabis rollout strategy to develop the multi-billion rand cannabis value chain and to capacitate hundreds of thousands of small-scale farmers, establishing cannabis agro-processing cooperatives that could grade and purchase cannabis for processing, extraction, manufacture, and distribution. Implementation of a cannabis development agency would be comprised of lead officials from government departments, industry specialists, IKS practitioners, community activists who are familiar with the plan and the potential value change. The cannabis desk will be responsible for coordinating the cannabis master plan for South Africa and liaising with all respective ministries. We need to empower our people by empowering our environment. So the South African constitutional order draws no difference between first, second, and third generation rights. Therefore, environmental rights are no less important than civil, political, or socioeconomic rights. We empower our environment by working with indigenous Dacha as our primary reconstruction and development agent. We emphasize the fact that we need to work with what we have, which is indigenous land-raised cannabis, because only indigenous cannabis aligns with the National Development Plan by unlocking the economic prosperity of the country with an environmental bottom line as the foundation for economic and social policy that allows us to address economic and environmental security and the growing impact of climate change. So cannabis properly regulated and organized and managed to benefit the majority of our people will establish new pathways for rural development, placing a hugely viable cash crop in the hands of the rural poor, marginalized and dispossessed. Cannabis is a South African natural resource and should therefore be managed in an innovative new social compact that recognizes the potential of this high value cash crop. I thank you for this opportunity to have made this presentation, and I invite as many questions as possible from the portfolio committee.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you for sticking to the time given. I think everybody should follow your lead. Thank you very much. And thank you for the presentation. Members, the presentation is before you. I now invite questions or comments. I have Honorable Janji and Honorable Swart and Honorable Nevot Drahans in that order.
I think she was actually the first. Honorable Vilma was probably, her hand was up first, Chairperson.
Oh, okay. Honorable Nevot Drahans.
Chair to chair, Mr. Swart, and we allow the chair to chair.
No, I was last, but Ms.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I would like to request that all the PowerPoint presentations please be sent through to the Secretariat so that we can have access. I have one question for the presenter, but two questions to the department. I'm not sure if the department will be able to respond today or keep it for later. But the presentation, you explained the cannabis genetics, can you please clarify that in terms of what it means? That's the one question I have for you. And then the two questions to the department chair, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to ask now or at a later stage.
You can ask now so that if they need to prepare when we deal with the responses, they would have had enough time to prepare.
Okay, great. Thank you, Chair. My first question, as the presenter said, I want to know why this bill is tagged as a Section 75 instead of a Section 76 bill. And then is it true what the presenters are saying in terms of that the department never did public consultations with the various entities within the cannabis community? Was there any public consultations done and public hearings from the department before we the drafting of the bill? Thank you. Those two questions for the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think it will be fair to deal with those questions because these questions, in fact, even Mr. Prince has raised them. So I think it will be fair for the department to respond to those questions when we deal with a response to the public hearings.
Thank you, Honorable Nihot. Regards to...
Just wait a bit, Mr. Prince. You will receive all the questions, then you can start responding.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Prince. Mr. Janji, Honorable Janji.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation by Raz Prince. I happen to be listening to him for the second time. He was more harder last night on TV. So I seem to have followed that. Thank you for a very comprehensive presentation. I must just make that point. And my only clarity, Chair, and comment I want to invite from him. Having declared this bill in front of us as fragmented, inward looking, and wholly inappropriate, IU was one entry of solution that I hear you presenting amongst others. You say, let us not waste our time. Let us put to the table a single holistic cannabis bill. This is what you seem to be saying, which in your view is going to be an inclusive and take into account all sorts of issues that you have raised as problem. So am I hearing you correct in saying that you actually, are you saying we should not waste our time, we should not continue with this which is in front of us, but go back to the drawing board and do the kind of things that you dealt with the economics of the issues, illicit kind of space that is untapped, just so many issues. So I find it, Chair, to be very comprehensive. Obviously, it's we're going to interact with this, but I want him to demonstrate that to us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janji. Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation. I am particularly impressed with the issues raised about the tagging issue, as my colleague has pointed out. I think that is a very important issue that we need to look at, because also that, depending on the tagging, depends on the nature of the public participation. And I'm sure, Mr. Prince, you're aware of the Mutatiel and the Doctors for Life matters. So that issue, we definitely will need a response from the department. I also am very impressed with the comments about medicinal cannabis, the traditional and national health producers. And I'd like your input on the issues we learned from the agricultural department of the possibility of the treatment of certain of the COVID-19 viruses using indigenous methods, including medical cannabis. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Mr. Prince.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me start off by addressing the Honorable Nivot with regards to cannabis genetics. So currently there is a conversation around distinguishing between the different cannabinoids. And we are saying that any distinguishing, and especially to the extent that the Department of Health and the Department of Agriculture is advocating, is irrational. It's what I call apartheid 2.0. We need to approach cannabis holistic. So currently, it is said that any variety of cannabis that contains a THC percentage higher than 0.02%
per milligram, yes.
Correct. That is considered, if it's higher than that, then it's dacha. If it's lower than that, then it's hemp. And currently, we have to import hemp seeds into South Africa if we want to work with them. We have developed two cultivars within South Africa. However, as I've said, that these have not been subjected to environmental impact assessment studies, and quite frankly, is not necessary in our context, because we have a variety here that has industrial applications, that has medicinal application, and has recreational applications. So importing hemp is kind of like saying that we're not good enough, and that which comes from Europe is better than what we have here, which is exactly what they said to us under apartheid, that we, the brown and the black people, are inferior to Caucasians, and that we will never rise up to their standards, and that we need to view life through their eyes. We are saying that is totally unnecessary at all. So there's absolutely no need to import varieties into South Africa. We need to work with indigenous cannabis, and this concentration on levels of CBD and THC is unrealistic, and it's irrational, and it's unnecessary, quite frankly. And we do not need that. We can most definitely accomplish everything that we need to do with what we currently have. With regards to the issue raised by the Honorable Swartz, that indeed, I mean, like the issue of tagging is very concerned, and we feel that the department, they need to explain to us what happened in that regard. Honorable Swartz, can you just repeat to me the second part of that you wanted me to address you on?
That was on the usage of, sorry, Chair, with your permission, the medical cannabis, given that we had an input from the agricultural department that they were looking into the treatment of COVID-19 with the usage of various indigenous methods, including the issue of medicinal cannabis.
Thank you very much. So in that regard, there's no need. I mean, this is a crisis, and we should not limit ourselves in trying to develop responses to this crisis. Therefore, we are saying that, because I've read most of the reports and saying that CBD could very well help in us responding to this crisis. However, there needs to be more research and development, which currently is being locked by virtue of the legislation that we have in place. We need to do research and development around our land-raised cannabis in order to determine to what extent that will be able to assist us in combating and preparing ourselves to respond towards this crisis. That research and development currently is being limited by virtue of the bottleneck of legislation. So currently I'm saying that the present regime does not allow us to adequately respond to this challenge that's been put to us by COVID-19. And that we accept at the end of the day that there was recently a high court decision that said that when we deal with the issue of medicines, that definition must be narrowly interpreted. Cannabis, for all intents and purposes, is an indigenous health product. It need not necessarily be designated as a medicine, which automatically requires a very strict regulatory regime. Now, with regards to allopathic medicines, which 90% of them are highly toxic, it's quite understandable why there must be a very strict regulatory regime. But the same concern does not exist in relation to cannabis. And may I just here add, quite contrary to what the DG of Health argued, I started using cannabis when I was 16. And by the time that I was 26, I had finished matric. I had 3 legal degrees and qualifications and diplomas. And I was a mini thesis shy of completing master's in law. And I was also still a virgin at the time. So all of this talk about psychosis and stunted brain and physiological development is not borne out by the experience of millions of users within South Africa. That is racist, outdated propaganda used to irrationally put people in fear about cannabis. With regard to the Honorable Janki, indeed, I think in its present form, neither the bill or the master plan will pass constitutional muster. So any attempt to try and push this through is most definitely going to end up in a court challenge. So for all intents and purposes, we need to go back to the drawing board. And the task before us is not that momentous. The solution is very simple, but it would seem that our legislator doesn't want to embrace that. The solution is deschedule cannabis out of the Drugs Act and the Medicines Act and allow DTI, DSI, and DALRAD to become the lead departments in relation to regulating cannabis. Nobody is against the regulation of cannabis. And in this regard, I must differ from Mr. Acton in the sense that we are saying that we don't want to be treated worse than the cannabis, than the alcohol or the tobacco community. So if you go on the street and you drive your car, I must accept that there are certain products which, if you use it, could incapacitate you. So therefore, if you choose to drive on the street, I would not be against, if I were to be stopped in a roadblock, that I had to be tested for cannabis usage. I would not be against that. I would accept that. But all of the other regulations or the limitations that wants to be put on the cannabis community is totally unacceptable. And for that matter, we cannot be regulated worse than the alcohol and tobacco industry. And we would be at this stage quite acceptive of the fact that at the very least, treat us the same as you are treating those other people. Although we are saying that the cannabis community and the cannabis plant deserves a less stricter regulation, especially when we take in regard to cannabis and children. Within the African custom, in terms of South African customary practices, cannabis is a family affair. And it's most definitely not the same as secondary tobacco smoking. So it's not to say that your kids would suffer the same harm as they would suffer from secondary tobacco smoking, which is much more dangerous for somebody that doesn't smoke. That concern does not exist in relation to cannabis. I personally have a 16-year-old daughter that's been exposed to cannabis every day of her life for the past 16 years, and she's never been to a doctor one time in her life, and she is a top academic student. So the concerns raised by the DG, with all due respect, has no basis in science, fact, or within the culture and customs of the people of South Africa. I hope that answers the question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Prince. The Department of Trade, Industry and Competition is also here. I think they have listened to your presentation. I think it will also help to enhance the master plan, the cannabis master plan. Thank you very much for the presentation. I think it's important that the Department of Health must continue to be here so that they can be able to respond to some of these issues that relate to them, especially the medical ones. Thank you very much, Mr. Prince. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you
and
very much.
Power to the works.
Thank you very much, sir. The next presenter is Cosato. Is Cosato here? How are you? Welcome, sir. How are you?
I'm welcome, Richard, and thank you very much for the welcome.
Thank you very much. You have 20 minutes to make your presentation.
Thank you very much, Chair, and I'll start now. We've forwarded the presentation to the Secretary, so we just wait a moment for him to flight it on the screen, please.
Okay. Now you can start.
Fantastic. Can we go to the next page, please? Thank you. Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity, and can I greet the rest of your committee also and those members of the public who've made submissions today. COSATU supports the Cannabis for Private Consumption Bill as they start to addressing a complex economic product and social issue. We think that the time for addressing these issues are long overdue, and we want to align ourselves with many of the presentations that were done in relation to the bill and feel that it's absolutely essential that we find a new way to interact with it. We've submitted our detailed presentation, and what we'll do in this presentation on the PowerPoint chair is just to highlight the main points given the time constraints. COSATU supports the progressive objective and provisions that will enable the effective regulation of the cannabis sector. That regulation must be informed by humane and progressive approaches to cannabis in all of its manifestation. It's been really unfortunate that in the history of South Africa, some of which has been outlined here today, we've seen the most horrendous conduct by law enforcement agencies and others against people participating or being active in the cannabis-related industry. And that clearly has to be stopped as a matter of urgency. As we define the regulations for this industry, it's got to be to ensure that it focuses on the lives and livelihoods of our people. It's got to create job creation. And then the important health and other benefits has to be promoted and expanded. Can we go to the next slide, please? Now, by way of introduction, we know that we're here today because Parliament has been obliged by the Constitutional Court decision to address the issues related to the private consumption of cannabis. What we'd want to say, Chair, is that this is absolutely important and we've got to fast track it. These are problems that afflicted our communities for the longest time. And while we appreciate Parliament responding to the Constitutional Court mandate, we must raise our reservations that this is an important social issue that affects our people. And it's sad that we have to be called to respond to the needs of our people by the courts, and we're not initiating it ourselves as the legislature. So it's a point that we want to make, that our legislature must please carefully evaluate what the impact of a variety of policies are on our people and define whether it's still appropriate and acceptable in a democratic environment. Chair, it's that test about both applicability and appropriateness and legality that we think must be informed by science. And so when it comes to the question of the master plan that's now being proposed, there's got to be detailed engagements with all of the role players and stakeholders in the cannabis sector to ensure that the policy that we come up with is as comprehensive and broad ranging as possible, and that includes the ambitions of all of the social partners. Next one, COSATU supports the development of a social plan, and we've seen its benefits in many other parts of the economy already. The poultry, the sugar, the auto sectors, the clothing, textile, and leather sectors, all of which has, through an engagement between the social partners, come up with plans for those sectors that respond holistically to the challenges. We do want to add our voice to many of the presenters here today who pointed out that there's been shortcomings in the consultation process. We certainly appreciate the fact that government has drafted a base document that should form the basis, in our view, of the engagements in the social dialogue to define a social compact in the master plan process. But we want to point out that the master plan process is defined by government, the process to be followed. And in this instance, we did not follow that master plan process. And while that is an incredible oversight and is unacceptable, it's not too late for us to remedy that. So our plea is that, notwithstanding the fact that government had done a presentation to NEDLAC on their findings around the cannabis industry, we want to point out that that can't constitute compliance with its public consultation obligations that the government has. And so in that respect, we'd like to see a process as defined by government that all government departments that are relevant to this engagement participate in with the social partners, and that we come up with a public policy that responds to the challenges that exist across all of the areas related to the cannabis and the related industries. Can we move to the next slide, please? While we support the cannabis bill, we think that many of the points that they're introducing are incredibly progressive. The fact that many people, unfortunately, have criminal records for smoking or possession of minimal amounts of cannabis clearly is unacceptable. The fact that we're now going to rescind their criminal records is certainly a move in the right direction, but it's a move that's hopelessly too late. And we know that the effects of criminalizing people for such matters has had a devastating effect on their entire life opportunities. whether it's employment related issues or any other areas, the unfairness of the way in which the state has responded to this in the past has to be mitigated and has to be addressed. What we need is a fair and balanced approach to regulating cannabis, much like the regulations in alcohol and cigarettes, a point that's been made before, a point that we support, that alcohol is by far the most destructive drug in our society with huge financial and social costs across the board. We've seen gender-based violence often being fueled by alcohol abuse. We see the horrendous amounts of road accidents and assaults. And we've seen now with the unfortunate consequences of COVID that when we've had the lockdowns and alcohol was restricted, how we were able to free up a lot of the health capacity that we have and reduce the amount of accidents and trauma within our society. Yet alcohol is not treated anywhere close to the way in which people and at a public policy level has engaged with cannabis. And so clearly what we've got to do is we've got to change the cannabis policy. We've got to ensure that it responds to dealing with all of the challenges that exist in that community and that it deals with the challenges that comes up as a result of the legislation that existed in the past. Can we move on, please? Here again, Chair, on this point, we want to reaffirm our support for the statement made by many of the other presenters, that we're missing an opportunity to comprehensively deal with the challenges and the opportunities in the sector. And we're missing it in part because we're missing the rich contributions that have been made thus far and will no doubt be supported by many of the other presentations, but is also supported by a lot of the international experience that has informed the policy that's in front of us, but also many of the submissions that have been made by the different stakeholders. So clearly, we're too restrictive in our approach towards the policy. It's not adequate to just deal with those matters by the Constitutional Court. We have to use this opportunity to deal with a comprehensive policy that ensure that it responds to all of the areas. Busatu agrees that the bill must be informed by the master plan, and we certainly want to see greater intergovernmental cooperation, because what we've seen thus far is some departments in government being an impediment to progress on the matters, and clearly there's a need to adjust the perspectives that come into the discussion. There's a need to finalize a view within government and then to take that view out to discussion with the partners. And clearly, again, we want to emphasize the view that these measures that we may introduce or may use to evaluate the present policy, that they must be scientific based. A lot of the prejudice and the other attitudes that have informed policy thus far has no place in an informed society that takes decisions on the basis of evidence, as clearly we've seen that that's not the case in this industry. Our federation supports an all-encompassing approach to dealing with all elements related to cannabis. And while we understand that some of the elements related to legal aspects of it may require additional work, we may be open to a differential application or effective date of some of the laws, but not the need to conclude a comprehensive policy that deals with all the elements of it. So this is about saying we've got to take all of the issues into account, and we may appreciate that it can't all come into effect on day one, but it's got to be an incremental move towards what it is that we agree upon. Next slide, please. Yeah, we also want to stress the point that we've got to deal with all aspects of the industry, which includes the value add and the marketing, which are presently excluded. It really makes it impossible for the whole industry to function in a proper, coordinated, viable way with the present regulations that are being proposed. So we've got to react to that differently. We've tried to spell out in our presentation here today, as well as the written submission that we made, what are the areas that need to be attended to ensure that there's a comprehensive review. But we've got to do a lot more work in relation to that. Whilst we've got to develop our own policy as South Africans, mindful of our intellectual property rights and geographic indicators that may give us a comparative advantage, we have to be mindful of some of the international examples that clearly has demonstrated there are better ways to deal both with the cannabis industry, but also with some of the challenges that's related to misuse or addiction issues or other matters that are thrown up. And it's about developing a comprehensive approach towards this that ensures that all of the aspects that have been raised in different ways are engaged upon, attended to, and then constituted in a proper policy that deals with how we are able to proceed. Next, please. Can we go to the next slide, please? Chair, then we want to stress one point that we don't recognize in the bill as clearly as it should be. Can we go back one, please? There we go. And that is the sale of cannabis. We want to contend that whilst there was the restriction on the use of cannabis and the illegality imposed upon it, what had happened to cannabis and the sale thereof is that a big part of it became part of the illicit economy that was controlled, managed, and profiteered to gang syndicates. And we know that this has constituted a key part of the income of those gangs, and it enables them to effect their control over communities. We've also seen a lot of the violence that have been driven by the turf war, the sale of drugs and other forms of illicit items, as well as cannabis, and that we've got to respond to that. And so the question of marketing, value add, and interacting with cannabis in a different way has got to take into account the effects that it has had on the development of the criminal industry in South Africa. And we've got to regulate it in a way that it closes off opportunities for gangsters to profit from it, and that it's readily available at different opportunities for people to purchase for medicinal, recreational, or any other reasons that they may pursue it. But the present policy cannot continue as it was, because that's leading to a whole range of factors that are destabilizing our communities and is unleashing a plague of violence as a result of many of these criminal networks fighting around turf. Next slide, please. In respect of how the bill is to be unfolded, we've got to make sure, as we have not done in many other industries that are related to the natural resources of our country, and here mining may be a good example, that we've allowed big multinational companies to come in and dominate those industries, effectively undermining the opportunity for local and smaller operators to be able to benefit and continue to provide jobs, employment, income, and livelihoods from the cultivation of cannabis. So clearly the timing of the regulations at the moment, we can already see has opened the door for some of the bigger users to get special regulations to produce certain products in South Africa for the domestic market, as well as exporting other areas of the products to be value added elsewhere in the world and no doubt sold back to us. So Chair, the regulations have not only got to be appropriate, but it's got to be timeous. If we delay any further the empowerment of smaller communities in the cannabis industry, we're going to effectively ensure that the market is so dominated by the big players that it would be impossible for the smaller players, who often was the only source of income in many communities, to continue to be active in this part of the industry and move up the value chain of this industry. So that clearly is an area that we've got to attend to as comprehensively as possible, but also as speedily as possible. An opportunity lost in the economy is not an opportunity that's easily regained while the supply is provided by someone else and the demand has been directed in that direction. So we clearly have to ensure that we move in that direction with a matter of urgency. And here the government must take special measures to defend the rights and the livelihoods of small growers, and it must ensure that there's support put in place to ensure that they can move up the value chain and different opportunities open up for them. Please go to the next slide. In conclusion, COSATU supports the speedy passage of the Cannabis for Private Consumption Bill into law, as well as the finalization of the master plan. Our view is that the research and the presentation that government's done, both to Cabinet and to Parliament here in the form of their bill, that that's an important base document. Whilst we may agree with many, disagree with many elements of it and agree with others, we believe it must be subjected to that rigorous process of the master plan, and all of the social partners must be engaged in a way that they are most constructively able to organize themselves and participate in helping to shape the public policy. The public policy has to be sensitive to the needs of people, both from a healthcare, recreational, and other point of views, but it also has to be mindful of the fact that this is an important area of economic activity, and it's a central to the developmental focus that we want to have in a country. And so what we've got to do is to ensure that we're opening up the doors for economic activity from all of those areas, and that the facilities and funding that comes both towards supporting cannabis and outside and from cannabis must ensure that it is used to respond to any of the dangers that could arise from the misuse of cannabis. There are some instances, and that will be part of the detailed discussion, that we've got to spend a lot more educational facilities, resources, and time on to make sure that some of the negative aspects are not perpetuated by the way the new policy is given effect to. Then finally, Kusatu welcomes Parliament's effort to address the constitutional concerns in the bill, but we believe that this opportune moment is what we should be using to bring about the far-reaching changes that are clearly required in the cannabis industry. Can we go up a bit more, please? Then the final point, Chair, is that it is absolutely critical that the bill be strengthened, and it must be strengthened now to ensure that the development of a sector that has huge financial and social economic benefits to especially poorer participants in the industry, that those doors are opened up as a matter of urgency. And so you as the legislatures have an important opportunity to respond to the public prejudice that exists, the challenges that exist, with public policy that's as comprehensive as possible, that looks at the social elements, but even as importantly to the economic elements, because not only COVID, but since the economic recession in 2008, we've had great difficulties in getting back to the levels of employment and opportunity for our people. We've now seen that COVID has further knocked the economy. The huge instances of corruption and criminality has to be responded to. We have heard many questions posed about the fact that because cannabis may be linked to illicit industries that's tied to gangs, is that related to the reluctance on the part of the legislature to react to that element of it? We've seen through many of the publications that have come out where we are being paralleled to a gangster state. Now, clearly, that is not what our society requires. That's not the society we set out to build when we adopted the Freedom Charter, to both change what this country looked like, but also what it should represent in the future. So, Chair, we have to act decisively. We have to act comprehensively, but we have to, most importantly, act mindful of the needs, the aspirations, and the legitimate expectations that our people have. So as we close, as Kusatu, in supporting this bill and making sure that urgent attention is paid to the measures that have been raised by us, but also by many of the other participants in this public process, that we brought together in that master plan process where we can have an opportunity to constructively engage on the basis of the science on what would be the best for our country and for this industry. Thank you very much for the opportunity today, Chair, and we'd be happy to take any questions that the committee may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kusatu, for the presentation. I think it was enriching. I think that is why when we started with this process, we insisted that we needed the master plan so that before we move to the bill, people can have an appreciation of what government is planning to do. But I think it is important that interaction with communities on the master plan should be intensified as a matter of urgency. Thank you very much, Comrade Tony. Any questions? What I must explain is that this process is an interaction between the presenter and members of parliament. So we would not be taking people who are not presenters to ask questions. I have Honorable Swart, Honorable Janji, Honorable Nibot Trahans, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Mr. Enrach, for your submission, which is appreciated. I would like to ask you one or two issues which you raise, and that is the you point out some of the problems with the bill whilst you welcome it. Possibly you might want to also submit further amendments to improve the bill, or whether you suggest it should be totally rejected and a comprehensive review or a comprehensive bill be produced to cover the broader elements that have not been dealt with in this bill. It's a very narrow bill dealing with specific issues. Given the interest of COSATU, and you made mention of the NEDAC process, I would think it might be something that you would want to engage in, although I appreciate there are policy considerations with the master plan, but this is an opportunity for the legislature to possibly consider broadening the ambit of the bill. Can I then just ask as well, you also refer to the regulations and the need for carefully looking at the regulations. And one of the regulations which I'm concerned about is the regulations in terms of the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development relating to hemp, which sets out that it can only be 0.2% of THC, which does seem to be very limited given for agricultural or industrial purposes. Would that be something that you as COSATU would also be looking into? And then lastly, you make a very valid point about educating around the dangers of misuse of cannabis. And possibly you could touch on that, because I think whilst we appreciate the input of so many members of the cannabis industry, at the same time, we also need to appreciate that there are communities that are very concerned about the possible abuse of cannabis, particularly when mixed with other drugs. And I think that is something we do need to look at. And then the issue of moving with dealing with these type of issues, moving away from a criminal justice perspective to a social perspective, social development perspective, to deal with what could perceive to be substance abuse in the communities. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Swart, Honorable Janje.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is just a quick clarity from Comrade Tony from COSATU. Because I think we need to be assisted here, Chair, as the committee, listening from everybody else who's speaking, because at the end, we must listen to everybody, but act in a way that demonstrates that we did listen. So the cool clarity that I am going to invite COSATU to help us with, you are in support, Comrade Tony, of a speedy passage of this bill in the way it is. And I want you to comment so that you can assist us, because before you, there was a very strong point.
Sorry, Honorable Janji. Ms. Kaja, can you switch off your mic? And Honorable Swart, can you mute yourself? Thank you. You can proceed, Honorable Janji.
Yes, sir. I want COSATU, Comrade Tony, to help us with the need for the speedy passage of this bill vis-a-vis the presentation before him that says this is actually problematic in the way it is, and that you need a more holistic cannabis bill than proceeding with this in its narrow form. I really saw that we were assisted as a committee as we listen to them, and as we have to come to a particular conclusion. Because it is one thing to pass this through and then start working on the master plan. So it's quite problematic for me listening here as to where do you start fixing this with all the timelines that are involved. I really want him to assist us there, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nibor Drachens.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you to the presenter. Greetings to Comrade Tony. Good to see you again. I like your presentation today better than the written submission. I like the presentation that was sent to us, and I say that because the written submission, you mention clause 1 brackets 1H and clause 5 ABCD. So, no, but that's not in the bill as it is now, in the form that it is now. So, are you satisfied with the bill in its current form without the two clauses 1H and 5ABCD? And I'd like clarification on that. And also, I would like to add that, yes, you know, this bill is for private use. And it means for an individual at home using cannabis. However, cannabis is being sold at schools by high school children themselves. So schools, you know, they bring in the sniffer dogs, you know, to check if there is any kind of drugs on the property or not. And children are being arrested at the schools for that. So no one, not even the department, has mentioned that aspect. So whatever bill that is passed, what should happen in the schools? What should the school governing bodies do? Because the bill will be used is for private use. But if we're having children selling cannabis at school, you know, they can say, well, it's for my private use, but it is being bought on school property, and schools are able to bring sniffer dogs and the police and are able to do, you know, drug testing in the schools, in high schools. So what then? You know, nobody's mentioning that aspect. So, you know, if you could perhaps have a comment on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nivat Drachens. Comrade Tony, your response.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for all those questions. Let me start by the first one, and that is the Honourable Swartz. Clearly, our thoughts are that the further engagement on the detail must happen in the master plan. So there's two things that I suppose we confronted with. The Constitutional Court has given Parliament a deadline to effect the changes. And so there is a challenge about complying with that deadline. But now that we're getting into the discussion about both the bill that's been tabled, but at the same time, the master plan that's coming from government, it's thrown up a whole different conversation within the society, Chair, about what we need to do with cannabis as a whole, whereas the Constitutional Court just focused on one area, and that is the private use on it, and that's what Parliament set out to respond to. But the public policy and the public ambition we can clearly see is now driving us to a point where we...
Sorry, Comrade Tony. Ms. Pfeffer, can you mute yourself? You can proceed. Comrade Tony, you can proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Because the issues are interrelated, we have to find a way now to deal with a comprehensive policy also. So there is a challenge that the legislator has to respond to. We have the Constitutional Court deadlines, we have the instruction to Parliament from them, and then we have the desire from both government and society to deal with a comprehensive policy for cannabis. And that's the obligation that we've got to respond to. So COSATU supports the Constitutional Court findings and welcomes that and appreciate that government's moving to give effect to that and hope that we finalize that as soon as possible, but not outside of the comprehensive policy, because the private use of it may have much more limited implications than the overall economic opportunity and prospects if we effectively and properly manage what it is that we do with cannabis as a society. So there is an urgent need for us to engage with that. We've certainly seen that there are ways in which the legislature can fast-track legislation. We've seen it in the World Cup with some of the regulations and now with the disaster management regulation also. So it's about the political will. It's about reaching a consensus as a society and then about making sure that we use the most appropriate methods that's available for us to do that. So Honorable Swartz, while the matter was at NEDLAC, it was nearly inappropriately brought to NEDLAC because NEDLAC in that forum where it was brought to is not the area that engages with the master plans. Master plans have a specific defined and determined process that it should follow, and government in all of its manifestations should be aware of that. So we were surprised when it came to NEDLAC, but that's neither here nor there. We appreciate having been made aware of it, but the process of engagement on the master plan and on the legislation is elsewhere, and that's where we want to finalize it, Chair. On the misuse of drugs, there's always that danger, and we've got to be mindful of that. And a big part of how we reflect our mindfulness is on education. We've got to do a lot more education around that to make sure that we minimize the areas of abuse. But it's not only the areas of abuse related to cannabis. The problems caused by alcohol abuse and by many other forms of illicit drugs is having devastating effects on our community. So as a society overall, we've got to find a way to respond more effectively through education and other means to ensure that it is that the education is appropriate and making people aware of that. So we're not making a call on whether we should or not. We're saying we must educate the whole society more effectively around it, so we don't have the same difficulties that people may have been referring to in the past. On the matter of hemp, the details of that will have to be engaged in the master plan, whether it contains 0.02 or 0.03, clearly just shows the ridiculousness of the policy when we have to import certain seeds for certain THC levels of THC in the product. And that must be examined, subjected to scientific rigor, and then we must take a decision on the society on how we want to move forward with that. But there are so many opportunities that are potentially vested in there that we have to move with speed to address that. Comrade Richard Yankee, again, makes the point about the speedy passage of the bill. We support that, and we've, in some respects, tried to outline our view on the Constitutional Court and the obligation that plays on that puts on Parliament. But out of the two measures or approaches that we've identified, we think the one that's most essential is the need for comprehensive policy that includes the issue about decriminalizing personal use, but also looks at all of the other areas. And that's got to be the ambit of the discussion within the master plan. If as a society we agree there that certain elements due to regulatory or constitutional court or other obligations that we have need to be fast-tracked, we can then take that decision there in consultation with the legislature. But I think our preference, Chair, is clearly for a comprehensive policy that deals with all of the elements related to this. Comrade Wilma makes an important point, and we are as concerned about the practices that are taking place at school. Again, here it's the question about making sure that we are able to expand the educational programs that we have, but also generally just engage learners more effectively, because whilst there is cannabis or other medicines that young kids may take to put them in some adjusted state of mind, the same problems exist around alcohol and other things in school. So it's about the education, it's about the facilities, the safety, the value system of the society, when the use is appropriate or not. All of those issues has to be engaged upon, and the society has to be educated. It's partly born out of the horrendous states of prejudice that was meted onto cannabis and really pushing it to the outskirts of society that's caused some of the difficulties that we have. But clearly it should not be on the outskirts of society. I agree it has important medicinal and other values for its users, and it should be expanded as a medicine to confront many of the challenges in our society. But that's got to go along with education that undoes the prejudices of the past and hopefully positions people differently in how they respond to that. I can just say, Chair, that when we look at the international examples in countries like Portugal and one or two sections of Britain, they've had great examples of how people, both from an alcohol perspective as well as people who are on some of the other drugs like heroin, cocaine, and that, how they've been able to have a different approach to dealing with the drug usage and then the questions of addiction. Clearly, we must treat addictions, any kind of addiction, the same way we treat alcoholism. It's a disease, and we've got to be consistent in our approach to it. But it raises the question about, is it because big industries were behind parts of this section of the economy, whether it's alcohol or any of the other relaxants that are out there, and we've got to develop a new approach. For us, that's part of the comprehensive policy. Whilst we may not have outlined in detail what our views may be on the specific elements, and I'd want to ask Comrade Vilma that I be allowed to get back to you on the two specific clauses, but I want to try and stress to the committee that as the dynamic process had developed from when the Constitutional Court decision was taken, they started the process about drafting a bill to give effect to that, and then the bigger discussion about an approach towards cannabis in a master plan, those processes have both interacted with each other and have adjusted each other. And we've got to be mindful to respond to the pressures that are thrown up from that and nearly engage with some of the contradictions or challenges. In our view, they're certainly manageable. Our preferred option, what I'd like to state again, is for a comprehensive policy that deals with all of the elements that are potentially going to be engaged upon in the master plan. I hope I've done justice to the question, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Comrade Tony. Thank you for the response and thank you for the presentation. I will now allow 3 minutes break before we invite the Eastern Cape government. So can you start at 11?
Agreed. Thank you.
Okay. Sure.
Thank you very much. Eastern Cape Government.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members, and people who are in the meeting. I'm trying to share the presentation, Honorable Chairperson. I don't know whether it shows.
It does, it does. Can you for a second switch on your camera so that we can see you? And then if your bandwidth is low, you can switch it off.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Mfundo Maqhubela, and I'm going to switch off the, I don't know whether I'm visible. I think I'm a little bit dark in the.
Yes, you're a little bit dark. But we saw you, you can proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm going to present the Eastern Cape Province Community input to the cannabis bill for private purposes. These inputs were facilitated in November last year before the bill inputs closed. We had the four sessions because we wanted as many farmers or stakeholders as possible to participate or to have inputs on the bill. The first session was, of course, for the provincial executive, which was held on the 17th of November. The second engagement was on the 19th of November, taking into a certain portion of the province. And then the third session was on the 24th of November, taking another portion of the province. And then the fourth session was also on the 26th, was on the 26th of November. We ensured that almost all the province is covered and as many people as possible participated, but we ensured that it is held under the strict COVID regulations protocols. The comments on the proposed cannabis bill for private purposes were as follows. The public consultations, the consulted public had the following comments on the bill. The bill was formulated without public participation. That was the first comment. The bill could have an impact on customary and indigenous law where economic and customary rights can be affected negatively as the bill currently stands. A law must be developed that provide holistic legislation as opposed to the piecemeal approach that is currently proposed by the Department of Justice. This is in line with what Honorable Kubule Janji has been asking this is what we are trying to say, the previous speakers. And even our people in the Eastern Cape province who participated in the bill, they said exactly that instead of having the piecemeal approach, we rather have a legal framework that look into the holistic cannabis approach. Then the other comment was there was a lack of consultation with the traditional leadership under whose ambit most of the existing cannabis cultivation takes place. And lastly, it lacks participation in regard to the protection and advancement of human rights. So these are the things that, or the comments that were made by people who participated in the bill. But if I can get a little bit deeper into them to unpack them, they talked about criminalization rather than commercialization. So the people first felt that the bill rather is more on criminalizing the production of cannabis and is quiet on commercializing the production of cannabis. For example, they say criminalizing cannabis perpetuates the involvement of South African police services and the Department of Justice in attempting to regulate and control cannabis use in the country. That costs government money, makes farmers criminals, and will make the policing more and more difficult as low THC, CBD, and industrial cannabis start to become more prevalent, which will require testing of THC levels. For example, if ever the policeman arrests you with a consignment of a cannabis, and you say that this is hemp that you are loading, it has a THC which is below 2%, they have to test it first before they arrest you. And it makes will work a lot for the South African police, because they have to test and determine whether the THC level is less than 2%. And then if it's less than 2%, then they can release you. But if it's more than 2%, they can arrest you. Now, where are the labs that they're going to use to test that? So these are the comments that came from the people. Alignment with social welfare and drug policy. The proposed bill is not aligned to South African Drug Master Plan 2019 to 2024, which states it goes all that statement. But the main statement here that people felt that this bill is not aligned to social welfare and drug policy. The cannabis for private purposes, as it stands, the proposed bill excludes any person who does not have access to private space to cultivate cannabis from access to
of the cannabis. So it's got CBD in it.
Sorry, Ms. Steyn? Ms. Steyn, can you mute yourself? And proceed, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. The another input on that, it was said that there is a considered view that this is an unconstitutional, as it prevents a considerable portion of South African population who live in an informal settlement or high density areas from the ability to cultivate cannabis and therefore a legal means to obtain cannabis. Then the third aspect that was raised here is that it fails to make provision for how people can access seed to cultivate cannabis. The quantities of cannabis for traditional and religious use, communities or people felt that cannabis for private purpose bill serves to effectively criminalize traditional healing, because the quantities that are stipulated, they don't allow enough cannabis for traditional healing. There was a suggestion that quantities for cultivation and storage for personal use in the proposed bill are inadequate for traditional healers, as they use cannabis for professional purposes to assist their clients as directed by the Amakhosi, their ancestors, and in the privacy of their homes. Groups that use cannabis for other reasons, including religious reasons, cannot be covered by the quantities prescribed under the personal use. The quantities prescribed for ritual use should also be different from personal use and linked to observed use during the rituals. So there were comments that the quantities for ritual use and for traditional use and medicines, they cannot be the same as just for private use. Expungement. It was indicated that all criminal records from the use, possession, and trade in cannabis must be expunged from the record with immediate effect. All prisoners being held on cannabis charges in South Africa jails must be released with no conditions, with immediate effect. So these are the things that were raised by the people. Cannabis and children. It was felt that the bill is too strict, because children, they are trained by the communities how to manage the bill. I mean, how to manage the production of cannabis skills and knowledge are transferred to the children. There are rules and guidelines that are put in place, and children assist their parents on the production of cannabis. And then now the proposed amendments and items for inclusion into the proposed bill. For example, the issue of the genetics. South Africa is a home to distinctive and world-famous land races, strains such as Pondo Gold and Transkei Gold. And those genetic or emphasis to genetic, they must be included in the bill. These genetics are naturalized, drought tolerant, and should form the basis of our cannabis research and industry. These strains represent imported intellectual property and plant breeders' rights that the cannabis bill should seek to protect as part of our cannabis heritage as a matter of urgency. So that is what people said, that rather than the bill trying to criminalize people, it has to ensure that the genetic material is protected and there is an intellectual property rights that is related to that. Development of the local markets. There can be no cannabis industry in South Africa without developing local markets. There is a potentially massive opportunity to create new pathways for rural development, placing a viable cash crop in the hands of the rural poor, marginalized and dispossessed people. So these were the aspects that people who attended these sessions came out with as a proposed changes that must be done into the bills. Into the bill, and also as a proposed item that must be added into the bill. Some they said they would let us remove this. Some they said let us add this. Otherwise, everybody who attended the sessions, they were happy with the bill. They said that the bill is good because the crop has to be regulated. Otherwise, it can be abused. But it has to ensure that it commercializes. I mean, it takes into consideration commercialization of cannabis. It has to take into consideration that it doesn't oppress the traditional healers. It has to take into consideration that it protects the genetic material that already exists in the province. It has to take into consideration that it is in line with the other bills that are in other departments. So thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, sir, for the presentation. I will now invite hands, questions or comments. Honorable Mola, Honorable Nibot Johan, in that order. Honorable Gandhi.
Well, thanks, Chair. The presenter is making an input on criminalization as compared to commercialization. In the master plan, the proposal there is that there must be permits or licensing, which must therefore prevent these cannabis to be used for illegal purposes. So do they think that the licensing or the permits that must be issued to those who want to trade on cannabis, do they think that those permits will give more restrictions for our people not to have an enough space to trade with these cannabis, or these permits are to actually give restrictions for illicit trading and opening for new opportunities or vast opportunities as it relates to these cannabis. The second issue, Chair, that I want to raise is that they are mentioning an issue of prisoners that were imprisoned before for on purposes that they were illegally trading on cannabis. In law, there is what is termed retrospective application. We may finish maybe around December, finishing up this bill or the process until it is signed by the president. But the principle of retrospective application would actually have an adverse effect on the matters they are raising, which relates to those who were previously arrested for having illegally operated on these cannabis. I just wanted to make that point. It's not a question, it's just a comment, just on the retrospective application of law. So at they even our people understand how these things operate. But then we'll have time as the committee to have an engagement on the bill. I think we have noted some of the things that you said, Chair, which will help us as the committee to arrive at a decision that will best suit our people. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ngola, Honorable Otrahan.
Thank you very much to the Eastern Cape for the presentation. I see in your written submission, it says phase two, it says that it's difficult as it means to develop or the commercialization stage, but was restricted due to the lack of enabling legislation to drive this sector. The challenges we still face today, it is said there. Now, I would like to ask, with this written submission and then with the Cannabis for Private Purposes Bill, I would like to ask, you know, the people of the Eastern Cape, what do you want to see? Do you want a complete change of this private use bill to include everything that they are recommending, especially for the commercialization purposes or for commercial purposes? Or what do the people of the Eastern Cape want to see from this bill? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nicole Trahans, Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Well, I firstly don't think it's necessarily correct to ask the Eastern Cape government what the people of the Eastern Cape want, although we do appreciate the fact that they do possibly, as elected representatives, represent the people. And we appreciate the inputs that have been forwarded to us by the Eastern Cape government and the fact that they have held, at least held some discussions with representative groupings. But I do think we need to hear directly from the Eastern Cape people. So can I just ask, I'm interested and I appreciate the fact that these submissions have been sent to us. But as far as the Eastern Cape government itself is concerned, as a government, I'd like to ask the input from the government itself. Firstly, about the tagging of the bill, surely the Eastern Cape government would like to see this bill, as Mr. Prince pointed out, that this should be a 76 bill, given that it has an impact on the provinces and not as it is tagged as a 75 bill. I'd like that input from the, and we can get another input with your leave, Chairperson. It doesn't necessarily have to be oral, but I would like to hear the government's position of the Eastern Cape on this issue, on secondly, the issue of the permits and licenses and the possibilities that are raised with the Department of Agriculture, the possibility that they admitted of corruption in the granting of licenses. What steps would the Eastern Cape government take to prevent the abuse of the granting of licenses or the granting of licenses to politically affiliated people as opposed to people on the ground. I think those are challenges. We know of the issues relating to corruption, and I think we would need to also engage if a government comes like the Eastern Cape government. We welcome the submission, but the whole thrust of the submission is about the views of people. I think we need to engage on the provincial level of government itself as well and possible abuses that do take place there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Janje.
Thank you, Chair. Again, I'm going to stay consistent just to ask the Eastern Cape government. I appreciate the presentation. It's very helpful that they have taken the trouble to interact with the communities there, and that we appreciate, and I hope that it's something that others would do. I do know, Mr. Swart, I think agreeing with you on your concerns, that we were helped a great deal in the 3GBV. We also had a community safety department in the Western Cape that came in front of us and presented their views. So this is not a new creation from the Eastern Cape. We have an experience in that regard, just as recent as we dealt with the 3GBV bills. So the issue that I want to get to the Eastern Cape consistently is, where do they stand on this? Do they support that we proceed with this bill in the manner that it is, or are they raising a different approach? I'm just being consistent on this, Chair, so that I follow everybody else who comes here. I don't want people to present and I don't know what they were actually saying after raising all of the important issues. Are they in support, or they are, as the issues they are raising, are they advocating for this more holistic approach? Well, they've raised issues of constitutionality and all of that. So perhaps in summary, if he can assist us in that regard, because if we're to do further public hearings in the province, we would piggyback on the work they've done. So we would not reinvent that wheel. We'd find a way to say, with the Eastern Cape, you have done this, you've come to Lusikisiki, if you've come to Lusikisiki, we're here to confirm what you've done. So it's not taking anything away from what we would do. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ryan Stradom, are you from the department?
No, he's been raising his hand all the time. So he's...
Hi. Hi, guys. Let me
are
just...
Are you from the department?
I'm representing CDC SA, and also I'm just a business owner in cannabis. I will be at the Cannabis Expo in 18th November.
Sorry,
hi.
Sorry. Yes. This process is an interaction between people who are presenting, who have asked to present. Hello? This?
Yes, I am.
Is this...
I commented on the cannabis bill when you just let it out, when you just made it public for the public comments.
No. This is not acceptable, because we hear as Eastern other people want to present. Guy, can you please just move? Can you please move, Guy, so that we can continue with the presentation?
Mr. Stradom, there are organizations that have asked to present. So it's only those organizations who have asked to present and were given permission. They are going to present and be asked questions by members of parliament. Thank you very much. Let's, Department of Eastern Cape.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I will start with a question from Honorable Nola.
Yeah, Brighton.
About the attitude of the Eastern Cape communities to the hemp permits and the cannabis licenses. indeed, the people of the Eastern Cape, they fully support the hemp permit. They see it exactly as the opportunity to ensure that the cannabis is properly regulated and the market is done correctly, legally, not illegally. So they fully support the aspect of regulating it through permits, but they only request that permits must be easily accessible and they must be affordable as well. Actually, they propose that it might even be cheaper or easier if they can be done provincially than nationally, the hemp permits. Maybe the marijuana licenses, they can still be managed nationally. They don't have a problem with marijuana licenses that are managed by SAPRA nationally, but they feel that the hemp permits, they can be done provincially. That is their proposal. If I come to, to the issue of the prisoners, the prospection of the application, that one we will probably tell them again that we were advised like this, and some, it might happen that some of them, they know that process. Unfortunately, Honorable Chairperson, myself, the legal aspects, I'm not very good on them or on it. So, but we can always tell them about that process. And coming to Honorable Wilma, who was asking what do the people want to see in the bill? And I think that question was probably answered by Honorable Swart, because ourselves as government, we were facilitating that people must have an input to the bill before it closed. And this is exactly what we were presenting here. We presented what they said. And actually, I tried to summarize it as much as possible. It was more than what I presented, Honorable Members. We submitted the written submission for reference. And then coming to Honorable Swart's question, and what the government wants on the bill. The government feels that the bill is fine, is right, is correct, especially in the light that there is a cannabis master plan that is developed alongside the bill. So the bill is taking into consideration the private use and also other aspects of utilization. But the provincial government also feels that the aspects of that were raised by the people, for example, the aspect of traditional use, maybe those aspects can be taken into consideration in the bill. And then the use for medicinal purposes in particular, that can be taken into consideration in the bill, and then also the protection of the genetic material. So those are the minor things that they are minor, but they have a huge impact on the people who raised them. Otherwise, the Eastern Cape government feels that the bill is fine, is correct, and then it, as the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, must continue with it. Coming to Honorable Janji's question, as the province government, do we support the bill? Yes, Honorable, we support the bill fully as the government, and with those changes that I just raised, that they can be taken into consideration. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thank you to the government of the Eastern Cape, especially for making the effort to consult all corners of the Eastern Cape to get...
Sorry, Chair. Just Swartia.
Yes, Honorable Swart.
Just the one question that I put about dealing with possible corruption wasn't answered. Particularly if you...
Can I finish first?
I'm sorry, Chair.
Thank you. Now, especially for making an effort to ensure that all corners of the Eastern Cape, at least there was an effort to ensure that people, people's views are coordinated and are expressed in this process. I think that should be encouraged, especially in the bills that directly affect our people. I think because not everybody has got access to the resources that are needed to make your views heard. I think it was a very progressive approach from the Eastern Cape government. Honorable Swart, your question that was not answered?
No, just related to concerns about licenses and the possibility of corruption and the possibility of the cost of licenses being too high, particularly given that the input also referred to the possibility of hemp industry being, the permits being granted at a provincial level, and what steps government will take, the Eastern Cape government, to prevent that occurring, and what checks and balances would be in place. Thank you.
I think he will repeat it, but I think there was an attempt to answer that question, but he can repeat it. For Honorable Swart's attention, can you repeat what you said about some of them being national and some of them being provincial?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Yes, Honorable Chairperson, exactly that. With the hemp permits, we felt that we can manage them provincially. And of course, we will manage the issue of corruption on hemp permits. I've never heard, even with the licenses. It's my first time to hear from the Honorable. Maybe it's because that they are done nationally, so we don't have that information that there is corruption between people who are applying. And then because the issue of applying for the hemp permit and the DAHA license is between the applicant and the people to whom you are applying. So we never been exposed to that information, but it was the province. We will ensure that there is no corruption on issuing the hemp permits, and I'm sure that it will be very cheaper. They will be very cheaper. For now, they are about 900 dirhams. I think they will be even much cheaper. We have control measures. We issued them, honorable members, I mean, honorable chairperson, in 1999, they were issued by the province up to 2005. And then after that, when we finished the research trials, we stopped issuing them, and because we allowed for commercialization to be issued by SAPRA again. So we are doing a lot of things as government, and we are trying to ensure that there is no corruption as much as possible, starting from the executive of the province, going down to individual departments and individual officials. There is a huge drive towards ensuring that there is no corruption. So I can be confident, Honorable Chairperson, that the corruption won't be a problem when it comes to issuing of the permits provincially. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
And corruption should be broader than just the politically exposed people. It should also be corruption in the private sector, especially monopolization by big industries. I think that should also be taken into consideration, Mr. Nkip.
Yes, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Can we have the Center for Child Law?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'm Advocate Morgan Courtenay. I'll be presenting on behalf of the Center for Child Law. A presentation was forwarded to the Secretary. I'm not sure whether he can put it up for us.
Sina, can you apply to the presentation? Committee Secretary, can you apply the presentation?
Yes, Chair, we're on it, first, Chair. But okay, just a sec. The presenter also has powers, Chair.
You can flat it on your side. Okay. That is it.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. The Centre for Child Law's position, insofar as the bill is concerned, I think must primarily be derived from the South African legal framework. And what we've done is, in our submissions, we have drawn on the existing framework. The bill will not operate in a particular vacuum, but would rather coincide and coexist with certain provisions that must be adhered to. Importantly is obviously the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. And there in my slide, I've listed the rights of immediate relevance. But also possibly more importantly is that the bill must also recognize that the Children's Act, as well as the Child Justice Act, as well as the Prevention of and Treatment for Substance Abuse Act, all will play a role to play, particularly insofar as children are concerned. Now, those pieces of legislation have been interrogated quite recently in the decision of S versus LM, which is on the next slide. But perhaps before I address what S versus LM was about, it's also important, and perhaps to Honourable Member Nero Drucken's question earlier, is that the South African Schools Act also, in fact, plays an important part in the regulation of children, particularly children who are found either using or in possession of cannabis. So moving to the decision of S versus LM, and perhaps I'm not sure if any of the members have read the judgment penned by the Gauteng local division of the High Court in Johannesburg. That particular judgment dealt with a variety of issues, but it originated from the conviction or the diversion of four young children, four school children, who all tested positive for Dacha whilst at school. And how it came about that they entered into the criminal justice system was that the National Prosecuting Authority, as well as the school, had developed this program called the Drug Child Program, which would randomly test various children at school. Those children who tested positive were referred to the criminal justice system for processing and were often diverted. And the children who did not complete their diversion successfully, those children were then brought back to court and ordered to undergo periods of compulsory residence. Now, the matter, a magistrate flagged a variety of issues in the treatment of these children who were accused of these offences. And it came before the High Court on urgent special review. Now, importantly, what the judgment does is it sets out how one should treat children generally in the criminal justice system. But importantly, for present purposes, is it sought to engage on the question of whether or not it should remain a criminal offense for children to be found in use or possessing cannabis in terms of the Drugs Trafficking Act. The case did not center on legalization, which is effectively what the Prince judgment by our constitutional court dealt with, but rather decriminalization. In other words, is criminal prosecution for drug-related offenses, and particularly cannabis-related offenses, insofar as children are concerned, whether or not that is constitutionally defendable? Now, the court went and in its judgment unpacked all the various submissions. But the one thing that stood out was that the government respondents, which were all the Department of Justice, the South African Police Service, the Department of Social Development, the Department of Basic Education, they all agreed, and correctly so, that criminalization in respect of children most certainly violates their rights. And importantly, the concession is made that that criminalization is not the answer to trying to deal with children who may suffer from some or other drug dependency. And I think that echoes the position adopted by Kusatu, which I think is also correctly made. And that it is important to emphasize that the Centre for Child Law's primary position is that when we are dealing with cannabis insofar as children are concerned, and whilst we accept that there may very well be a need to protect them from cannabis use or cannabis abuse, that criminalization most certainly is not the answer. And what S versus LM does is it sets the groundwork for the discussion and should inform any policy and legislative reform going forward. S versus LM, because it declared sections of the Drugs Trafficking Act unconstitutional, is currently awaiting confirmation proceedings in the Constitutional Court, and a date has unfortunately not yet been provided. But I do think that it would be important that Parliament take heed of the fact that the Constitutional Court is going to be dealing with this particular matter, and hopefully will deal with it in time for whatever its views are can be appropriately addressed in the bill. The Centre, obviously, when having a look at the bill itself, and in light of particularly the judgment that came from the Gauteng local division, attempted to craft its recommendations so that the recommendations themselves accord broadly with our understanding of what the judgment means and what we believe the Constitutional Court is likely to find vis-a-vis children and cannabis-related offences. So turning then to the submissions of the Centre, our primary concern with the bill in its present form is that it fails to meaningfully address children who may find themselves in the cycle of drug abuse and who may very well be found to have contravened the provisions of the Act. And we must stress again that the bill must take into consideration the other legislative obligations of the state and the rights and responsibilities set out in the legislation that I mentioned at the outset. The bill in its present form we submit, and at least insofar as children are concerned, does not adequately do so. So whilst the Centre in broad brushstrokes most certainly supports the bill and what the bill attempts to do, there are various problems that I will seek to address. The first problem, which is on the next slide, that the Centre identifies in its submissions, is the term is the use of the term guardian. Now, the bill defines a guardian in terms of how it is defined in the Children's Act. Now, the problem with that is that the term itself does not actually reflect the lived realities of most children in South Africa. Most children in South Africa do not live or not in the permanent care of his or her guardians, but rather in the care of extended families, grandparents, grandmothers in particular. And we would suggest that to the extent that guardianship is a relevant criteria, that the term appropriate person rather be used. And the term appropriate person is in the process of being included in the Child Justice Act, and would then obviously refer to any member of a child's family, including his or her sibling, who is 16 years or older, as well as any form of caregiver. So we submit that the term is far more inclusive and encompassing of the family structures that exist in South Africa, rather than the term guardian. Bill also provides then at Clause 3, and insofar as it contains a range of offences, but Clause 3 provides what are known as cultivation-related offences. And the problems that we identify in our submission is effectively that, firstly, Clause 3.2 of the bill seems to create somewhat of an anomalous situation. If one has regard to the bill itself, 3.2 provides that any person who cultivates a cannabis plant at any place and who fails to take reasonable measures to ensure that cannabis plant is inaccessible to a child is guilty of a Class C offense. Now, the anomalous situation is caused by the fact that, or the unintended consequence of that, is that it would effectively also include children who may very well be growing cannabis in their backyards, from taking reasonable steps, for instance, from preventing their siblings from gaining access to it. And what we submit is that that particular issue ought to be considered, and the practical consequences of that particular offense should be better thought through. The prohibition also runs contrary to the exceptions created in the bill, vis-a-vis children who are allowed to assist in the cultivation of cannabis plants that are grown by their guardians. And there, particularly at clause 6.1b of the bill, specific provision is made that effectively allows children to assist in the day-to-day operations of their guardians' cannabis business or personal growth. What we submit and what we set out in our submission is that we believe that confusion may be cured by either removing the defense vis-a-vis guardians or by qualifying this particular clause that deals with the exception in clause 6.1b. We also note in relation to cultivation offences that the offence applies to anyone and everyone, and there is no special provision made in respect of children. Once again, children may very well find themselves accused of cultivating or accused of one of the cultivation offences. And we believe that particular emphasis should then be placed on ensuring that their children themselves are protected and afforded the maximum protections in terms of the Child Justice Act. And if adults are using children in those particular instances, that particularly Section 92 of the Child Justice Act be referenced. And we make a submission, we provide the committee in our submissions with a template of what we believe the clause should look like. Then moving on to the cannabis-related offences. The cannabis-related offences, much like the cultivation offences, also applies to any person and not just adult persons, despite the wording of the bill. Now, the Centre doesn't have any objections per se, but submits that it would be appropriate and necessary, once again, and as was the case in cultivation offences, to make reference to the Child Justice Act as well, and particularly Section 92 of the Child Justice Act is concerned, as well as making special provisions for children accused of cannabis-related offences, particularly those that contained in Section 7, which deals with obviously any person who is in possession in a public space of cannabis that is not concealed from public view is guilty of a Class C offence. Then in relation to the consumption-related offences, once again, these provisions are aimed at anyone and everyone are inclusive of children. Now, what the Centre recommends, and it applies generally to all the offences relating to children in particular, is that rather than being prosecuted, the bill should look at alternative avenues to ensure that children receive the necessary assistance, particularly those where they are found in possession of small quantities that are evidently for personal use or are found consuming cannabis. So whilst the Centre does not support children making use of cannabis or possessing cannabis, what our overall contention is that the criminal justice system is most certainly the incorrect forum for these matters to be dealt with. And S versus LM, which I mentioned at the outset, clearly provides that or clearly confirms that criminalization is certainly not the answer, particularly insofar as children are concerned. Where a child is found using cannabis or is in possession of cannabis, then there are various protective measures that are contained in the Children's Act, particularly Section 150. So we often hear of parents who complain that their children are addicted to some or other drug and are in need of assistance and often turn to the criminal justice system in an attempt, and perhaps a misguided attempt, to assist them cure their children of this illness. The Children's Act makes provision explicitly for drug use and dependency in children and parents being themselves unable to assist their children. So the bill itself, insofar as it deals with children, or to properly consider what the Children's Act says. In addition to that, there is obviously the provisions of the Prevention of and Treatment for Substance Abuse Act, which also provide for the referral of children to treatment centers in the event that they are addicted to some or other drug, and in this particular circumstance, to the extent that they are said to be addicted to cannabis, that those particular provisions ought to be applied. These particular outliers, and if we go to the next slide, these particular protections are well able to be slotted in when dealing with the protective measures that are contained in...
Yes, 5 minutes.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I am almost done. We submit that these protective measures could be included in Clause 6. Clause 6 itself has certain shortcomings, which we highlight in our submissions themselves. But what we submit is that the committee should give proper consideration to whether or not it truly intends to criminalize children when there are other better measures in place and measures that the government itself has accepted are better alternatives to criminalization, particularly in relation to the kind of what could be called petty offenses. Those then would be the submissions of the center. And as said at the outset, whilst the center broadly supports the bill in its current format is not workable, at least insofar as children are concerned, and more thought must be given as to how we are going to be protecting our youth in the future.
Thank you very much, Advocate Cornish. Thank you for the presentation. And members, any comments or questions? Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the submission. I think it's very helpful to have that emphasis, and particularly the LM case. And I recall, Chairperson, when we tried to deal with sexual promiscuity in adolescence through the criminal law, and that was in the Criminal Law Sexual Offences Amendment Act, and that was possibly not the correct approach, and it was struck down by the Constitutional Court following the teddy bear decision. And I think one can learn a lot from this submission, as well as what occurred in that matter, that when we are dealing with the possibility of substance abuse or the impact on adolescents of cannabis, that we should move towards what the presenter, the advocate, is saying, rather not approach it from a criminal justice perspective, but from a social perspective, and look at other methods of dealing with this issue. I would like to just ask the advocate, when we were the issue of the LM case, which I have read, and I seem to remember that the fact that the High Court struck down all criminalization would also mean that restorative justice provisions would not be applicable. What is your views on that? And I suppose it speaks for itself, because criminalization would involve a restorative justice approach, which then wouldn't be applicable. But surely you would support some method of a restorative justice approach to deal or to assist adolescents, children, and families that are concerned with the possible substance abuse by their children, and then try to make use of the criminal justice sector rather than social welfare interventions. And I'm sure Ms. Niva Druchen would agree with me that could be an approach, given her social welfare background and experience in communities. So we try to find what is in the best interests of the children. So I welcome your submissions and your particularly your proposed suggestions to improve the bill in this regard. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Swart. Advocate Courtney.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Swart, for the question. Insofar as the question relating to restorative justice is concerned, one must, and what LM clearly tries to differentiate is the fact that a justice response to substance abuse, and let me call it substance abuse proper, those children who are in the grips of some form of substance abuse, that a criminal justice response can never be appropriate. So the restorative justice element that you are advocating or that you make mention of would not find application in those instances. Where restorative justice may very well prove to be useful is where children are found or are convicted or at least charged with some of the more serious offences that are outlined in the bill. And you would have noted from our submissions that what we're not saying is simply do nothing with them, but rather the more serious offences drug dealing and the like, that those type of offences could be dealt with by a more restorative justice response. Whereas where a child is found in possession of small quantities of cannabis that were evidently made evidently for his or her individual use, that in those and maybe in the grips of some or other addiction, that a social response to that particular problem is the most appropriate response. What we can't do is the criminal justice hammer, to use the old analogy, is like taking a sledgehammer to a nut. It just doesn't work. And what the story of these four particular children in LM demonstrate is, despite, and I happily accept that the NPA was trying to act in the best interest of these children, but despite their altruism in that regard, these children were effectively incarcerated for a period of 8 or 9 months before eventually being released for an offence, an incredibly petty offence. And that child, as a child, you live in a continuum. You only have so many years as a child and so many years to develop. And that is all but ruined by having to spend 9 months in a facility designed effectively to keep children who have committed very heinous offences off our streets.
Thank you very much, Advocate Courtney. Thank you for the presentation. You are released.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thank you for making such a presentation. The next presenter, which will be the last presenter for the day, is Shoindas Atunis.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, if I may proceed.
Yes, you can proceed.
Greetings, Honourable Chair and members of this Parliamentary Portfolio Committee. Thank you for the opportunity. It's been a long road, and I must confess that it's an honour to be able to sit and present to you all today. My name is Paul Michael Kaikil. My colleague, Andrew Laurie, and I will be speaking on behalf of Schindler's attorneys. He'll be handling a different aspect to me. Schindler's attorneys has supported the legalization efforts in respect of cannabis since at least 2013 and almost entirely pro bono. What I purport to do in this presentation is to address some general jurisprudential observations, while Mr. Laurie will address you as to how and why we say that meaningful and effective reform of our cannabis laws is not too big a fish to deliciously fry, ultimately. Having said that, Chair, the Parliamentary Committee has our written submissions. They run into 25 pages with little to no repetition. So what I propose to do today is not to waste everybody's time by rehashing those. Also, I'll try not to overlap with what other speakers have said or what I anticipate they are likely to say, not only, well, in the coming days. And of course, we will avail ourselves to answer any questions from the committee, and I would rather leave more time for questions than to burden you with what's already in writing. Honourable Committee, I talk to you today as a lawyer. I come dressed, in fact, as a lawyer. But fundamentally, despite talking the language of a lawyer, I'm a human being. I'm a human being who is subject to your lawmaking and the application of your laws. I address this parliamentary committee with due deference and with due respect, but I will be appealing to you as empathetic human beings, as the following presentation hopefully makes clear. My ultimate submission is that the problem with the Cannabis for Private Purposes Bill is that it is premised on a system of criminal prohibition. And I say that a system of criminal prohibition is one which is illegitimate when it comes to drug use and possession and even drug trade, for the following reasons. Your very own National Drug Master Plan acknowledges that the war on drugs has failed entirely, and that problem, and please underscore problem drug use, is a public health and not a criminal justice concern. We need to be empathetic human beings. We need to help and not harm our brothers and sisters in society. Now, while I talk to you as a human being, I am also a lawyer, and you are also all parliamentarians who have an oath to uphold the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. And so I'm going to keyhole what follows through Section 36 of our Constitution. And we're all familiar with Section 36 of the Constitution. It generally applies to when somebody sues government to say that a law or its application is being applied unreasonably, unjustifiably, and ultimately in infringement of that individual's human rights. So Section 36 is the prism through which we view all allegations of rights violation. I also ask you to please bear in mind the founding provisions of our Constitution. Section 36 of the Constitution talks about reasonable and rational Section 36 of the Constitution in relation to reasonable and rational regulation of cannabis, which involves abandoning criminal prohibition, is the very less restrictive means to achieve the purpose, and I quote that, which is referred to in Section 36. How we might go about reasonably and rationally regulating cannabis in this country will be addressed by my colleague, Mr. Andrew Laurie, following upon me. But now there's this concept of general rationality, which underscores all constitutional jurisprudence. When there is available a less restrictive but more effective option, as in this case, the state will stand accused of irrational lawmaking and irrational application of harsh laws when it nonetheless prefers the more restrictive but less effective option. I will make the submission, and I do make the submission, that it is literally an assault on the citizens of our country. I say this because you have, with respect, entirely failed to account for the unthinkable and unjustifiable harms which befall an individual when they are dragged through our criminal justice system. These harms outweigh even the worst harms of cannabis use, which incidentally were overstated by the Department of Health last week. The Department of Health had the opportunity in front of the courts to put the evidence of cannabis harms before those courts and to prove them. I think it was in the words of the Constitutional Court that the Department of Health failed miserably in putting that evidence before court. So let us now not try to claw back on prohibition on the basis of science that, or on the basis of propaganda that has been overtaken by science. When we are looking at a balancing of harms, and we do not take account of the harms of criminal prohibition and of being dragged to court and being taken out of school and facing disciplinary inquiries and facing charges and spending time in holding cells, it results in a system where in an otherwise legitimate endeavor to prevent harm, the state inadvertently causes more harm than it could ever purport to prevent. And I must add at this stage that this philosophical and fundamentally human realization applies to all so-called drugs that fall below the established harms of tobacco and alcohol. Why is it that we must keep suing government for incremental change, substance by substance, entheogen by entheogen. And I must mention at this juncture that about 2 years ago, in a Mail and Guardian event at which I spoke alongside SAPRA's then Griffith Molewa, I was asked the question, jokingly of course, by Mr. Molewa, why is it that civil society keeps suing government for change? Why is it that you don't just talk to us? And of course, the tongue-in-cheek answer for me was that we try. We write letters to government. We try to have productive engagements. But generally speaking, the only time that we get government's attention is when we are standing talking on the steps of court. And that is an unfortunate situation. So instead of constantly suing government, drug by drug, entheogen by entheogen, substance by substance, why do we not appoint a task team or a commission of inquiry that entirely reformed our drug laws on the basis of that science and statistics were long ago overtaken? Or sorry, long ago overtook the 1970s political propaganda that came out of the United States and which actually informs our drug laws. Not science, not statistics, not reason, not rationality, propaganda. This much is common cause. This much has been proven. The data exists. If you just ask it of us, it shall be forthcoming. We are here to talk to government. Ultimately, what I'm going to say, therefore, given what everybody has said previously and is going to say in the following sessions, is that this goes beyond the Cannabis Master Plan, which incidentally doesn't align with the Cannabis for Private Purposes Bill. It goes, for that matter, beyond an all-encompassing Cannabis Act. We should revise the Drugs and Drugs Trafficking Act in toto. It is outdated. It is unscientific. It is irrational. And insofar as it relates to the Medicines and Related Substances Act, the same thing can be said. Ultimately, before I hand over to my colleague Andrew Laurie, who will take you through what rational and reasonable and non-invasive or quite easy legislation could look like, what I envisage, and I would like our lawmakers to keep this in mind, is would it not be an incredible day for our country if the preamble to what is ultimately the Cannabis for All Purposes Act, or whatever you might choose to call it, could read something like, to regulate the many uses of cannabis, mindful always to not do more harm to our fellow human beings, our brothers and our sisters, than what we prevent. Thank you very much, and I'm going to ask Andrew Laurie to please come onto the screen and take over from me.
Thank you, Paul Michael. Sorry.
Thank you, may proceed.
Thank you. Honourable lawmakers of this portfolio committee, I do not intend to address you on the minutiae of the bill itself. That is not my place. I'm also sensitive to the reality that the Constitutional Court judgment of September 2018 only requires you to go so far. However, while the iron is hot, I rather intend to address you on the spirit of the bill itself and the massive opportunity that it presents. Honourable lawmakers, the bill in its current form is primarily concerned with punishing people. The bill seeks to impose a complex set of limitations on the amount of cannabis and cannabis derivatives that can be possessed, cultivated, and shared in our private lives on pain of heavy criminal sanctions. For example, it is proposed that an adult person who grows more than 4 cannabis plants should be imprisoned for 4 years or fined, or that an adult who freely shares without remuneration 4 plants or more with another adult should be imprisoned for 15 years or fined. Honorable lawmakers, the reality is that South Africa is a great place to grow cannabis and that massive swaths of South Africa's most disenfranchised and vulnerable citizens already grow and share quantities greatly in excess of what is proposed. It is also called weed for a reason, and nature is an unpredictable beast. Unforeseen and uncontrollable shifts in weather patterns can alter the amount of THC and CBD present in a plant or cause a plant to yield far more than expected. I mean, disposing of a few seeds on the ground in a remote part of one's land and leaving it unattended for a few months could lead to one arriving home to an entire field of cannabis. Lastly, the uses ascribed to cannabis plants are all but immeasurable in number. And all of these uses require different quantities of cannabis, with the most desirable uses in the way of concentrated medicinal home remedies requiring the most cannabis, and quantities well in excess of what the bill is proposing. The point of my submissions in this regard, honorable lawmakers, is that in the battle against South Africa's established growing community, against the remarkable versatility of the cannabis plant, and against nature itself, there will never be a rational and defendable limitation on the number of plants that can be cultivated and possessed, and there will never be a limitation which justifies the disproportionate harms wrought by the criminal justice system. There are too many variables. With respect, and to quote Myrtle Clark of Fields of Green for All, nobody counts our whiskey, and rightfully so. How much of the South African Police Service's time and resources does the state intend to divert towards counting, weighing, and testing cannabis plants? How long is our already overburdened police service expected to spend chasing after hundreds of thousands of farmers and stoners? How much time and resources is our already overburdened judicial system expected to expend on ventilating rational defenses by these hundreds of thousands of farmers and stoners? And how long are we expected to bring constitutional challenges to the rationality of these limitations, which we assure you will continue? However, we submit that if the bill were to embrace and serve South Africa's established growing community, the remarkable versatility of the cannabis plant and nature itself, instead of seeking to limit against it, the bill represents a massive opportunity not to punish and to control, but rather to empower on an unprecedented scale. More specifically, if the bill were to abandon its attempt to narrowly impose limitations on the form and quantities of the plant itself, and rather focus on broadly enabling and regulating the uses of the plant, we achieve something great. If I may, honorable lawmakers, an analogy that I often refer back to in this regard is that in my garden, I can grow as much hops and barley as I like. I'm also at liberty to combine those hops and barley with yeast and water and brew as much beer as I like. However, the minute I want to sell my beer, the law requires me to first confirm the safety, quality, and efficacy of my product by obtaining a license to sell. The suggestion being that instead of regulating amounts and quantities and equivalencies, the bill should focus primarily on standards and thresholds in relation to the quality, safety, and efficacy of cannabis, with a view towards reaching a point where the legislature is comfortable enough to allow, at the very least, our massive rural cannabis community to trade in cannabis for remuneration without the need for overly prescriptive barriers to entry. Fortunately, we submit that this approach is far simpler from both a drafting and enforcement perspective than the amounts and quantities-based approach. At present, cannabis in South Africa exists on a spectrum. On the one end, there is a default position imposed by the Constitutional Court judgment, which is that South African adults can grow and consume cannabis in their gardens without adhering to any standards whatsoever. On the other end of the spectrum, there are medical standards, which are well documented. Now, if we also account for the fact that cannabis, unlike alcohol and tobacco, does not kill people, the bill would not need to go into any great depth in prescribing a baseline set of growing, reporting, and inspection standards, which at least elevates the safety, quality, and efficacy of cannabis grown and sold by rural farmers above the default position on the lowest end of the spectrum, which is that we don't need standards to grow and smoke it. If a baseline can achieve a point where we are comfortable to allow rural trade, then we've already seen great success. Then if we work backwards and draw from the medical standards on the furthest end of the spectrum, it would also be possible to achieve a slightly more stringent baseline set of growing, reporting, and inspection standards, which could conceivably provide for non-rural commercial trade, this being a secondary objective, of course, to enabling rural trade. The suggestion is that by borrowing backwards from medical standards on the far end of the spectrum and accounting for the fact that, unlike its more freely traded neighbors, alcohol and tobacco, cannabis does not kill people, the standards imposed by the bill can and should become less and less stringent as one moves further from medical standards through commercial standards and all the way to rural standards, being on the lowest end of the spectrum. The highest court in the land have ruled...
Yes, 5 minutes.
I'm nearly done. Thank you very much. The highest court in the land has ruled that we may all grow and smoke cannabis without adhering to any standards at all. This means that there is scope for the legal principle of valenti non fit in urea to apply. Valenti, non-fit, and Nuria translates to a willing person, to a willing person, it is not a wrong, or more formally, to voluntary assumption of risk. Using this paradigm, the exercise of using a standards-based approach to draft the bill would essentially amount to a relaxation of our already well-entrenched and well-documented medical standards, instead of having to conceive of new provisions afresh. We would essentially be reverse engineering something that already exists, accounting for the fact that by default, there are no standards that are required for me to grow and smoke my own cannabis. If we can use standards which already exist, reverse engineering them to get to a point that elevates the baseline to something higher than the default, then surely we can work together to achieve a point where we are comfortable with allowing rural trade to commence, and then above that, commercial trade, and then above that, medicinal trade. Growers aside, a focus on a standards-based approach would also have the corollary effect of protecting the end user. At present, there are no such regulations. The end user can grow and smoke what they like without any adherence to standards whatsoever. Thank you for your time, Honorable Lawmakers. That is my presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lorry. Members, any questions or comments? Honorable Ngola.
Well, thanks, sir. And thank you to the presentation. Chair, I think I like the fact that they've drawn interest in coming to the public care consultations to help us as Parliament of the People to enact suitable laws that best represent our people. I've got only one question, and this question, Chair, is on the basis that they are representing a law firm. Earlier on today, we had the Eastern Cape provincial government, and they presented to the committee that they've done public consultations as the provincial government, interacting with our own people. The suggestion they received from those people that were part of their public consultations, where that we must, as we enact this act, ensure that there is a retrospective application in a manner that will release those who were previously arrested, having been caught using on illegal basis these cannabis. What is your view on this matter? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mora. Over to you, Mr. Lorry and Mr. Kitcher.
Yeah, if I could answer that in two phases, thank you. Indeed, this is a multifaceted consultation process. Of course, we haven't done any sort of respectable data gathering in the sense of statistical data gathering and analysis. So we can't come to you and say that what we say necessarily represents the will of the people, and we are the people to listen to, because I think that it's going to be a process of listening to everybody who makes submissions to you that highlights what is actually the will of the people, and that will be the commonalities through the submissions, because it seems that the differences between the submissions are few and far between. But as to the retrospective application of the fact of doing or expunging criminal records for cannabis possession, and if I may say so, it ties in intricately with the notion of restorative justice, because presently SAHPRA debates whether or not they should be regulating everything cannabis. They've put in place a whole set of guidelines, which one of which is that you're not going to get a cannabis license from SAHPRA, a medicinal cannabis license in terms of the Medicines Act, if anybody at a high level on your team has a criminal record. Now, of course, if you have a criminal record for having grown or consumed cannabis in the prior 10 years, it means that, ironically, you cannot get a job growing cannabis, despite the fact that you might be very, very good at that. So the retrospective application of something like expunging criminal records is something which I think we fully endorse. It does represent the will of the people, and it's something that I don't think you're going to find much opposition to from anybody who has made submissions or will yet make submissions.
And just to add to that, something to guard against when it comes to retrospectivity is to make sure that once people are pardoned and they come out of jail, they're not faced with a bill which proposes that their jail sentences be doubled or tripled for the same reasons that they ended up there in the first place. Right now, if I was to, as I say, freely, without remuneration, give someone 4 or more cannabis plants in terms of the current bill, I'm in for 15 years. I would rather just stay in jail if that's what I was being faced with.
Thank you very much. Any further questions, members? None. Thank you very much, especially to the presenters and to everybody who has been listening and those who have joined these public hearings. We are continuing with the public hearings tomorrow, starting same time, 9 o'clock, until 7 o'clock in the evening, to listen to everybody, to try to ensure that the voices of the people are listened to as we try to process this very complicated bill. We are going to do our best to ensure that we listened to everybody. So for today, the meeting is adjourned. Let's meet tomorrow. For members of parliament, 8:45. First presenter will start at 9 o'clock.
Thank you for your time, everyone.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.